It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, that seemed appropriate. I'm Bob. The program is live. This is the 24th day of October, 2019, and yes, at almost this same time, we may have been going 7 to 10 back then, Eastern Time, but at roughly the same time, exactly 14 years ago, this program premiered as a standalone internet-based broadcast. So, it's our horniversary, anniversary, what have you. And how does the Northern Hemisphere celebrate the 14th anniversary of the horn? I woke up this morning to several notes from members of the Horn Family Community Congregation out on the West Coast letting me know that the Kincaid Fire was roaring through. And I can't say I'm pleased. I mean, really? Was that entirely? Yes. Because, well, Kincaids, historically speaking, have gotten around. The first of us came here to barely the eastern side of the Allegheny Front, but we kept pressing onward. A bunch of us wound up, well, the vast majority of us, Virginians, and then West Virginians, wound up about around here where I am, but a lot of them kept moving. One of them wound up being a noted state senator in Oregon in the last century, about 50 years ago, and some apparently went south into California, where they named a community after themselves, and now they've named a fire after the community. Somewhere along the way, my distant relatives forgot how to spell their name, because the Kincaid Fire there in California is K-I-N-C-A-D-E. We're the K-I-N-C-A-I-Ds. Going back towards Scotland, it's often K-I-N-K-E-A-D. Emphasis on kink, I guess. But here we are, 14 years later, still going, still running based upon the determination of a community that wants independent, liberal, progressive, commercial-free, non-capitalist radio. And for that, well, the community is who should be celebrating. Because y'all make all of this happen. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Hot on both streams atop both watchtowers on the Colorado border wall, Brother Pop. I know.
I was only joking.
No, he wasn't. His brain was misfiring. But that's okay. A lot of brains are misfiring right now. There's a lot of people just coming plumb unglued. Yeah, it started near Kincaid Road, according to Sparky. Over in the chat room, if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, Well, by all means, feel free to run on over to headon.live and click on chat room. If you've already got a screen name and a password, jump in. If you'd have, if you don't, pick one out. And you'll be greeted by, the folks showing up for the party, Anatole and Jimmy and Ralphs and Squeaky and maybe more later, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen to fold space today to become Man Cave, and ably assisted by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. I wanted to get, last night being Wednesday, Sparky takes Wednesdays off. Wanted to see what Sparky felt about doing a front porch for this evening for the anniversary, just in case anybody wants to chime in on that into a sort of a group conversational setting. Let me know, Sparky. Appreciate it. Let's see. Steve in New York asks, or says, I've been thinking. I was wondering if the Colorado border wall is near the air bases from the Revolutionary War and had anything to do with long-standing relationship between the people of the United States and those of ancient Rome. I don't even know if I can handle that right now. The battles for the airports back in the Revolution? Probably. And the Colorado border wall was probably also involved in the lead up to the Bowling Green massacre, because the people who were massacred at Bowling Green couldn't get away from the people massacring them because they were blocked by, the wall. Yeah. I do confess that last night I enjoyed myself immensely. I haven't watched the World Series in a while. I just decided that it would be good to do that again. And I jumped in, and I watched Game 1 from Houston, and I watched Game 2 last night, and I was made happy by both. Game 1 was a bit of a nail-biter. And it was a nail-biter until about the sixth inning, where I picked up. And then poor Justin, what's his name, Vrielander? His wheels came off, and it wound up being just a rat killing. I mean, it was a stomping, and I hope it continues like that, because I'm a National League guy, and I'd like to see the Nats do this, because they haven't won a World Series since what, 1930. No, there hasn't been a World Series game in D.C. since 1933. Whatever. And 1933, it was just a year after Walter Big Train Johnson had retired as manager, if I got my history right. And, of course, he had been his curveball was barely a wrinkle, but his fastball defied the laws of physics. Anything moving that fast really should convert to pure energy, and that may be what happened. It may have just slowed down once it hit the catcher's mitt. But Walter Johnson was a whale of a pitcher, and I was thinking about folks in the Tune In last night. The Tune In is a local establishment up on Capitol Hill. They got real good, and not just throw it in the fry basket and dump it in the oil bar food. Real cooked, and they got a different lunch, different dinner every day. Delicious food, friendly barkeeps, and they are some hardcore Washington Nationals fans. And I know they were loving every minute of it. Of course, the broadcast team, it consists of Joe Buck and John Smoltz. And Joe Buck was doing everything in his power to try to jinx the Nats. It's a superstitious game, baseball. And encouraging John Smoltz to talk about how the Braves went into Yankee Stadium, took the first two games and never won another one, in a World Series oh so many years ago. I don't know why they feel the need to do that, but they did. I mention all of this, though, not because y'all are such baseball fans. You're not. But to lead into an example, oh, and by the way, Sparky is generating the front porch code, which he will then transmit to Brother Deacon Asa, who will then put it on headon.live. I'll let you know when that happens. But between baseball and basketball, nothing is safe anymore. At any time now, I anticipate finding out that there has been a revolt among the ranks of the American curling team, or that the American ballet theater has had some sort of upheaval because of maggotism, maggotry. Yeah, the Washington Senators, thank you, Randy and PA, the Washington Senators, well, they left Washington in 1971 and became the Texas Rangers. And they were a hapless lot at that point in time. But the Senators themselves hadn't played in a World Series game since 1933. Yeah, what's that? David in South Carolina stands says, Donald Trump's going to try and ruin it. He's going to attend Game 5 in D.C. Hopefully there will be no need for Game 5. Well, if ever there was a reason to root for the Nats in Games 3 and 4. No, wait a minute. Actually, I sent out a suggestion to Major League Baseball last night. I suggested that they invite him for Game 3. Invite Donald Trump to Game 3 so that he can be booed so loudly that they'll be able to hear the booing aboard the International Space Station. You know they're not going to cheer him. There aren't that many maggots who can afford baseball tickets. Maybe it'll just be really quiet and the only one cheering will be Brat Kavanaugh sitting there behind home plate in a luxury box with about 19 beers around him. Wonder if we could find out who bought those tickets. Come on, Nats.
Well, I would have liked to have been there, but the deep state set it up. The World Series was rigged.
But I'm getting ahead of myself because it is our anniversary, and I was kind of excited, our Horniversary. Every program here at the Horn does begin with gratitude. And so thanks go out to our 24th of the month subscribers. And that would be thanks to Josh and thanks to Pamela in Washington State. Thanks to Samson. Thanks to James. Thank you all very kindly. And thanks for all the profound help pulling together Ferg's Bale. And among other things, that means that I think soon we'll have him out after Agnes and I dive through a couple of more flaming barbed wire hoops in this criminal justice system. Yeah. Thank you, one and all. Thank you so much. So, and just a reminder, today, tomorrow, and yesterday as well, it's all fundraising free radio to the end of October. November 1st will come a week from tomorrow. So I find that exciting and relaxing, and I thank you all for making that possible. But I mention all the baseball hoopla for a reason, because everything in this era this era of the 24-millisecond news cycle, this era of the politicization of literally every aspect of our lives. I don't know why I found this particular story a little bit surprising, but, you know, I did. I should learn not to be surprised. Because this has to do... Well, our long-distance dedication is about a little boy and a dog, and a feeling I think we can... No, it's not that. You know, and I probably don't need to go over this again, but I'll do it anyway. Just a reminder, free speech is a largely misunderstood concept. Free speech, as it is contemplated within the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, is a proscription upon governmental action that would quell the speech of the citizenry. Madison didn't really feel like that we needed a Bill of Rights, but everybody else disagreed and said, oh, yes, we do. And so part of the price of ratifying the Constitution was that the instant it would be ratified, there would be 10 amendments, bang, that were added to it right off the bat. And freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of association, freedom of religion were all included in the First Amendment. So far, this should be all pretty much ninth grade civics for a group as sharp and well-educated as the Horn Family Community Congregation. You'll note that over these 14 years, I've never felt compelled to open a university or an institute, you know, like Prager University or Trump University, or what was it the Beckerhead had? He had the, the Paul Revere Society? No, that was the Savage Wiener. Savage. And they were all just grifts to separate their mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers from their cash. I've always worked under the distinct impression that the community that forms around this program is pretty well informed, pretty well educated, and darn smart. And so when I say that the First Amendment is a proscription on governmental action that would quell citizen speech, y'all already know that, I presume. Corollary to that, however, is the fact that it does not keep private organizations from limiting speech. For instance, let's say you're a Southern Baptist minister and you step to the pulpit and you say, I acknowledge the supremacy of the Pope at Rome. Jesus was not born of a virgin. Mary was just a little teenage girl that God apparently raped. And there's no hell. There is nothing to prevent the Southern Baptist Church from quashing the fuck right out of your free speech. And the next thing you know, you will not be a Southern Baptist minister anymore. And the First Amendment has no operation whatsoever. Now, dovetailing into this story is the fact that our country is awash in innocent blood because of our overly fetishized reading and interpretation of the Second Amendment. Enter Major League Baseball umpire Rob Drake. Rob Drake has been an umpire for several years. Well, 20 to be precise. Among other things, he umpired in the World Baseball Classic in 2006. He's called numerous games each and every season. And so, because there is far more heat than light coming from the maggots in regard to impeachment, consider yesterday's stupid little dumb show. And I mean dumb show, yes. Well, pity they weren't a little more mute, but that was eating up the airwaves this morning. Maybe we'll get to a clip from Matt Gaetz losing his shit on MSNBC. But Rob Drake, Major League Baseball umpire Rob Drake, also has an opinion, which he expressed partially in all caps, about impeachment. Oh, and by the way, if you want to see this, if you want to use the Skype link to get into the front porch group here shortly, go ahead and jump right in. Just refresh the page at headon.live. And you'll see the Skype link, and it'll put you right into the conversation. Thank you. Thank you, Sparky, for pulling that together, and thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for posting it. Thank you very kindly indeed. Yeah, Rob Drake, what he knows about the Constitution, you could probably put in a thimble and not even have enough there to get a piss ant wet. It was 6:22 p.m. on the 23rd of October when Jeff Passan, P-A-S-S-A-N, over at ESPN, found a previous tweet from Rob Drake in which he declared, "I will be buying an AR-15 tomorrow, because if you impeach, all caps, my president this way," all caps again, "you will have another civil war. Hashtag MAGA 2020. Yeah. A 50-year-old Major League Baseball umpire has threatened to start shooting people if members of Congress engage in their constitutional right to investigate and impeach a president who has committed more high crimes and misdemeanor, and perhaps bribery and treason as well, than Carter has little liver pills. Flavio pointing out that Rob Drake is also a Christian minister. Well, naturally, that's why he said he'd go out and buy an AR-15 and start sending people to Jesus up in heaven. Nothing, 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 nothing is immune from being polluted by the toxic politics of Nitwit Nero and his band of miscreants. What was the response of Major League Baseball to being informed that they've got a maggot umpire who's threatening to go on a murderous rampage? ESPN, Major League Baseball told ESPN, "We're aware of it. We're looking into it." Now, the Christian minister and umpire Drake did delete the tweet shortly after posting it, but it got out there, and yeah. And a little bit earlier in the evening, he tweeted, "You can't do an impeachment inquiry from the basement of Capitol Hill," he misspelled Capitol, "without even a vote. What is going on in this country?" Because, of course, he's dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. God. Then yesterday, Rob Drake deactivated his account. His union, the Major League Baseball Umpires Association, which, along with almost every other union, is roundly and soundly despised by Republicans. Well, his union said, "Rob is a passionate individual and an outstanding umpire. He chose the wrong way to convey his opinion about our great country. His posting does not represent the view of the Major League Baseball Umpires Association or reflect those of the umpires we represent. The MLBUA, the MLBUA, supports all of the umpires who ensure fair play in the greatest game on earth. We are a group of individuals with diverse opinions and beliefs, united in our desire to continue our excellence officiating MLB games." Naturally, Rob Drake, who was born in Pennsylvania, now lives in Arizona. It's like Arizona's a magnet that draws maggots. It's a maggot magnet. Dare I say that Major League Baseball should exercise its right to terminate the employment of an individual who expresses his willingness to go on a homicidal rampage and murder innocent people? They would be within their rights to do it. I'd almost bet that there's something about termination for cause in the collective bargaining agreement between the MLBUA and Major League Baseball, even. Why couldn't he stick to umpiring? If you have to, go down to the corner bar where there's lots of maggots and say, "Yeah, let's all get AR-15s. They'd all go, "Hell yeah! Let's get on over to Rural King. They got them by the gross." They're not like them sissies at Walmart and Dick's that quit selling them. I will be eagerly awaiting the news that Rob Drake is no longer an umpire in Major League Baseball or anywhere else. But boy, I tell you what, he soaks up Republican talking points like a dry sponge. "You can't do an impeachment inquiry from the basement of Capitol Hill without even a vote. What is going on in this country?" That's what every Republican from home to Rome and Maine to Spain has been saying for the last couple of weeks. When in fact, you can do an impeachment inquiry and you can take secure testimony in the skiff. Because Republicans leak like a sieve and only want to be there for purposes of witness intimidation. Lady B with a note says, "That's the most mind-boggling thing of it all. There are folks like him, Rob Drake, who think they can act against the entire United States government if they don't get the outcome they desire. Of course, it reeks of white privilege. you would think he was delusional, unless, of course, he has a reason to believe he will somehow succeed. Yeah, terminate, Lady B continues, terminate that umpire for basically making terrorist threats against the U.S. government. Come on, Bob. You act like he knelt for the national anthem or something.
Ooh.
Yeah, now, that's when it gets serious. Now, that can, you know, a sports league can take away your entire career for doing that. And blacklist you and blackball you and make sure you never work again. Because that's, well, that's serious stuff. Steve in New York says, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on something here. Laura Ingram told LeBron James, I think that's who it was, to shut up and dribble. I think it's okay with this umpire being a maggot. Now, I do agree with you that his particular statement of taking up arms is a fireable offense, probably under a morals clause in the contract. Yeah, I bet the Malabua and Major League Baseball never thought they'd need a you can't be an umpire and a terrorist, a domestic terrorist at the same time clause in their contract. You want to bet the lawyers start rethinking that one? But this drivel from his union about him being a passionate individual and an outstanding umpire, you know, I don't think you can be an outstanding umpire if everybody in the stadium has to worry about not you blowing a balls and strikes call, but you turning around and blowing the head off somebody behind home plate and yell a MAGA 2020 while you do it. Leave Donald alone. Yeah. Kyle says, Jesus Christ, between the NBA bowing down to China and proving they don't give a flying fuck about decency, even though they actually pretended to be all about diversity, and now Major League Baseball letting a murderous psychopath stay employed, I can't even fucking watch sports anymore. God damn it, can we just end this whole shit show so I don't know, by yesterday? T'would be nice. If only it were so simple. But it's everywhere. You can't get away from it. And it's not like anybody compelled Rob Drake to do that. And since when, this is a silly question, since when do ministers of the gospel endorse slaughtering people with whom they disagree? And doesn't his tweet amount to a threat to commit treason? Isn't one of the definitions of treason taking up arms against the government of the United States and we the people? Isn't that exactly what he said he would do? I mention this story because, well, we had the same sort of shit yesterday from Rick Wiles and that dude named Metaxas and Jim Baker and that bleach blonde evangelist, evangelical hustler, Cindy something. They are trying to, every one of these statements is terroristic. At least a partial definition of terrorism is a threat made against the citizenry of violence done in order to achieve a political or social goal. In Rob Drake's case, the goal is to allow a serially criminal president to continue violating the Constitution of the United States, and alongside it, his oath to protect and defend it, which becomes impossible when you're actually violating it. How isn't that terrorism? Jack in Shreveport says, sounds like Drake's union is like the police union. Republicans are okay with it, but all progressives see them do is support their members hurting or killing innocent people. To be fair to the umpires union, I suspect they never figured they'd have to deal with something like this. Because there are a lot of people out there, and the more privilege that you have, the more likely you are to be this way. But there are a lot of people out there who just think, hey, no big deal. I'm just living my life. This isn't touching me. If there's a good side to this story, he is not umping in the World Series. Although he has in the past. He's been on World Series crews. I forget what year. I just closed out the ESPN story. And he's also umped at the All-Star game. If I see anything about him getting a much-deserved firing, we'll follow up with that. But like I said, don't be surprised if, you find out that some prima ballerina at the American Ballet Theater decided to come on stage and do pirouettes while wearing her maggot hat, because the disease is in a state of full metastasis. They're everywhere. So that's just part of what was on my mind earlier today. And meanwhile, in one of the more salacious pieces of for-profit media fake journalism, Katie Hill, freshman member of the House of Representatives, is being slimed by what she claims is an abusive, estranged husband in which she's involved with a divorce. And the right-wing rag in Britain, the Daily Mail, saw fit to publish nude photos of her. And they said that she has a Nazi symbol tattoo. I don't have the details on what the tattoo was. But she has sent a cease and desist letter to them demanding that they remove the nude photos, which, of course, they acquired via, no doubt, unsavory and salacious means. And California has a humdinger of a revenge porn law. Good luck to Katie Hill. I mentioned Matt Gaetz. He came 16 shades of unglued today when he was confronted with his own bullshit. that happened over on MSNBC. The question, of course, always remains, why do you book a freak like this? Hallie Jackson tried to confront him, but he was being a smartass from the beginning, and he wasn't engaging in anything resembling good faith. It all began by riffing on the appearance of Stephanie Grisham over at Fox and Fiends, in which she said that Nitwit Nero was proud of the gang of thugs who tried to forestall a constitutional inquiry into his own misdeeds. We'll pick it up from there.
Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, he sits on the Judiciary and Armed Services Committees and is joining us now from Florida. Congressman, it's great to have you back on the show. Thank you.
Thanks, Hallie. My IFB wasn't really clear. Did Jackie Speier identify my race and my gender in the context of my activities as a member of Congress yesterday?
I think you heard her soundbite. I want to give you the chance to respond. Go ahead.
Well, no. Did she say it was that we were a bunch of white men? What does the fact that we are white men have to do with our desire to represent the millions of constituents that we serve? I mean, I was deeply offended by that. Like, when Jackie...
Yeah, he's deeply offended by being called a white man. I'm deeply offended by calling him a white man. I'm actually ashamed he's a white man, but also not surprised. And I don't know how much of a man he is. He seems more of a thing, you know, more of a tool, more like old Trump's personal toilet plunger.
Speier walks in a room, I don't sit there and say, you know, a white woman came in, or when someone of a different race or ethnicity comes in. This is the type of identity politics from the left that seems to permeate any substantive or procedural argument that they make. And it's sickening to me that that is how we would be thought of. The people.
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't just white men. I mean, Carol Crazy Cat Lady Miller, who apparently prayed to Jesus before she joined that thug riot. Well, she was there too. I mean, she's white, but she's at least a white woman. I mean, damn. Oh, the silliness.
We serve are diverse, and it's really...
Yeah, the people you serve may be diverse, but goddamn, your caucus isn't. Jesus, you could do the Charge of the Light Brigade recast as being peopled by the family of Casper the Friendly Ghost, and the Republicans would have enough. Suffice to say, there would be very very little pepper among the salt. Not much coffee with the cream.
Kind of sickening.
Let me talk about the substantive piece of it then, because there.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Are two pieces of this, right? And by the way, Congressman, I want to talk to you about Turkey and Syria, so I'm going to ask you to leave me some time for that in this discussion. But I want to start.
Why don't
with
we start
the
with
process.
That? What are your thoughts on Turkey
let
and
me
Syria?
We started on this conversation on the idea that Republicans walked into this secure area of the Capitol yesterday, including some Republicans who could have just gone in and participated as members of those committees as the rules allowed. So, what was the point of this? Was this really anything more than a stunt?
The point was to highlight the true due process inequities that are damaging the Congress and damaging the institution of the presidency.
Bullshit. And kind of one of those for Hallie Jackson, too. It wasn't just a stunt. It was actually what in other circumstances would be obvious felony witness intimidation, witness tampering. How do I know that? Well, here's how I know that. And kind of shame on Hallie Jackson for not suggesting that he was there to tamper and with the witness and intimidate Laura Cooper. Because, see, another maggot, Dunn wrote a letter to Ms. Cooper. And it's pretty, well, it's sleazy. Of course it's sleazy. Laura Cooper is at the Pentagon, and she had relevant information to give in testimony to the committee. And when she was subpoenaed, and of course, her legal bills aren't being paid by the RNC or any sugar daddy maggots out there. She's on the hook for it herself. And she doesn't have the wherewithal to fight a court battle, even if she was inclined so to do. So David L. Norquist, who is Deputy Secretary of Defense, Norquist. Where do I know that Norquist name from? Nah, David L. Norquist couldn't possibly be related to Grover, could he? You know, Grover drowned the government in the bathtub, Norquist? Nah, I mean, that'd just be too much of a coinky-dinky. But anyway, Deputy Secretary of Defense David L. Norquist sent a threatening letter to Daniel Levin that read, "I understand that you have been retained by Ms. Laura Cooper, the Department's Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia, as her private counsel for a deposition to be conducted jointly by the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the Committee on Foreign Affairs, and the Committee on Oversight and Reform, pursuant to the House of Representatives impeachment inquiry." And he put that in scare quotes. "The Department's October 15, 2019 letter to the chairs of the three House committees, tab A, expressed its belief that the customary process of oversight and accommodation has historically served the interests of congressional oversight committees and the department well. The committee's purported impeachment inquiry, however, presents at least two issues of great importance, neither of which are worth the ink and paper being used, or the electrons for that matter, to transmit this communication. The committee's blanket refusal to allow Department counsel to be present at depositions of department employees so that we can do a thorough job of reporting back to our God Emperor and along the way remind the witness that she's got a lovely little life there, and it'd be some real pain, real trouble, it'd be a real tragedy if something happened to it." "Oh, this is privilege that we can't comment on privilege or classified information, particularly material covered by the executive privilege, which is the president's alone to assert and to waive, and which he will assert over things that aren't even privileged. It violates settled practice." No, it doesn't. Do you know how many witness interviews were conducted? And I'm correcting myself to a certain extent. From a question that was asked last night. Do you know how many witness interviews were conducted behind closed doors with only the members and staff of the committee present, say, with Trey Gowdy's Benghazi inquiry alone? 20, 30, 40? And the Democrats showed up, and the Democrats' lawyers showed up. Each side got to ask questions. Then they moved on to the next one in a complete and utter exercise in pure partisan bullshit instigated by the Republicans. And by the way, it was just last week or so that a quiet report was finally issued saying that there was nothing, there was never any there, nothing to it whatsoever. It was entirely a concocted load of horse shit perpetrated by the Republican Party solely for the purpose of damaging the presidential hopes of Hillary Clinton. Of course, they had admitted that a long time before, but it was interesting to at least see it in print. It violates settled practice and may jeopardize future accommodation. Furthermore, the Department of Justice has concluded, Bill Barr, congressional subpoenas that purport to require agency employees to appear without agency counsel are legally invalid and are not subject to civil or criminal enforcement. That was generated on May the 23rd, 2019, conveniently. And he goes, the second issue is the absence of authority for the committees to conduct an impeachment inquiry. In its October 15th, 2019 letter, the department conveyed concerns about the committee's lack of authority to initiate impeachment inquiry, given the absence of a delegation of such authority by House rule or resolution. Bullshit. It's called the Constitution, you pettifogging prick. This letter informs you and Ms. Cooper of the administration-wide direction that executive branch personnel cannot participate in the impeachment inquiry under these circumstances. Blah, 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 blah. So, I'm sure, sincerely, David Norquist, I'm sure that Lawyer Levin, well, I engage in a little fantasy every now and then. What I'd love to have seen happen would be for Mr. Levin to have written back and said, Dear Mr. Norquist, at first I thought of treating your letter the way that Erdogan treated Donald Trump's little love note. But instead of trashing it, I've kept a copy, and I have provided a copy to all relevant media outlets, as well as to relevant law enforcement agencies for investigation of you, sir, for the federal crime of witness intimidation and witness tampering. Hugs and kisses. So that's how I know, because that letter went out before the riot went down. That is how I know that the sole purpose of Matt Gaetz and the other rioters was witness intimidation. Plain and simple.
I don't think Democrats have answered the question yet. Why is Donald Trump getting less due process than President Clinton got?
Because he's not getting less due process. Bill Clinton got impeached over a consensual sex act. There's not even a bill of impeachment out there against Donald Trump yet. But Matt Gaetz is never going to be accused of being the sharpest knife in the drawer. Oh, no. Yeah, that's right. Going back to the, I'm deeply offended by being referred to as a white man. Brother Deacon Asa notes, yep, Matt Gaetz never done heard of his fellow maggot, namely frothy Rick Santorum, make reference to the blah people. Well, howdy do. Thank you, Herman. David L. Norquist is the younger brother of Grover Norquist. Wonder what expertise David L. Norquist has for being the number two dude at the Pentagon. Now, you reckon David L. Norquist is a decorated veteran of the armed services and one of our recent conflicts? Maybe he's old enough to have been in Vietnam. Or maybe he's just a political hack with a bunch of money who was appointed to do the bidding of that shambling wad of adipose, jealousy, vanity, ignorance, and fury that squats in the White House. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm voting for number two. Oh, and it wouldn't be... it just wouldn't be... And we're going to... A reminder, we'll be going to the front porch here in just a moment. Robert up near Morgantown says, Norquist and his wife Stephanie have three children. Younger brother of Grover Norquist, founder of Americans for Tax Reform. Thank you very kindly. Holy cow. Maybe we'll talk about this on the front porch. Tracy just sent me a picture of the Rosa Parks doll. She's looking a little pale, a little peaked. No, what I was saying is it just wouldn't be fun if we didn't have a me Meghan McCain moment. So let's at least have fun with that before we go to the extraordinary ordinary roundtable.
On our stage, here come Hot Topics with Whoopi.
Yeah, skip a bit, brother. Let's just scrub forward until we see. Yeah, there's our little nutmeg.
No Republicans, 90% of Republicans still back the president.
If not higher.
It's getting higher.
92
yeah.
in some.
But what does that mean
but
in terms of numbers, though?
Just really quick on this issue, yeah. And then I'll go to that. I hate political stunts across the board in general. I think we elect people in order to serve in Congress. In 2016, when Democrats held a 26-hour protest on the Senate floor over gun control, remember the sit-in? Mm-hmm. I thought it was party politics, optics, just simply for protests and sake of the cameras, like Abby, like you're saying. And I think...
Because... it's not like a bunch of little children had been slaughtered in at Sandy Hook Elementary, or that rivers of blood are flowing through our country, and that the Congress refuses to do a single damn thing about it. It was just for publicity. Oh, I tell you what, they're missing. They are missing a great server at a Waffle House somewhere.
Democrats shouldn't be doing it. Republicans shouldn't be doing it. I think we elect you to get your freaking job done one way or the other. And when you're sitting on a sit-in for 26 hours or you're doing what Republicans did yesterday, it's the reason why Congress has a 13% approval rating. Because it looks like, by the way, Matt Gaetz, when did you become a TV star or want to be a TV star? You want to do that? Get the hell out of Congress. Get a TV job. But you're probably not more interested in
hiring.
Do it.
Boring.
But, Matt, when you get the TV job, please eschew, that means to avoid as harmful, Matt, cheetah prints.
But I mean, though, but this room that you're talking about that he went into is the SCIF room, and yeah. It's meant to be complete. You're not allowed to have cell phones in it. You're not to have cameras in it. You're not supposed to. It's supposed to be a completely secure room. Yeah.
Not supposed to order pizza from it. I don't recall. Was there a big pizza order in? Maybe there were pizzas during the gun protest. I don't know. But it also didn't take place in the SCIF. And, well, it was also a real issue. But expecting our little nutmeg to be able to distinguish between those two things is, well, that's probably a bit much, isn't it? And as we come to the end of the first hour on this anniversary broadcast, just taking note that for the first time in the history of the Republic, a and this certainly, our buddy Reverbo pointed this out the other day. It seems like it's well past time. For the first time in the history of the Republic, the body of an African American is lying in repose in the Capitol. Congressman Elijah Cummings' casket has been placed there. There was a ceremony in Statuary Hall where he laid in state. He'll be buried tomorrow in Baltimore. The first African-American lawmaker to lie in state in the Capitol. A building which, incidentally, was built by people who had their labor stolen from them. Yep, slavery. Nancy Pelosi said Elijah was truly a master of the house, and talked about how he mentored young members of Congress and never flagged in his pursuit of justice. Let's remember that he first went to Congress in 1996, and that he was, as all the reports have pointed out, the son of sharecroppers. He was also subjected to the indignities of attacks by Donald Trump, who referred to his home city as a rat and rodent infested mess. Because, of course, Donald Trump is a racist, and Donald Trump is a white supremacist. Nonetheless, Elijah Cummings took the high road and said, "Come on, Don. I'll take you to Baltimore. We'll walk the streets. And you can see my city instead of just saying filthy things about it." But he didn't even say that. He stayed classy and called on us all to rise above the microaggressions and petty bigotries and racism of people like Donald Trump. Requiescat in pace, Elijah Cummings. So, I tell you what, it being a Thursday, we'll check in with Brad and Desi and see what they've got on the plate for us at the Green News Report. And while that's happening, we'll connect for the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable Anniversary Edition and come back be gathered together inside the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves.
It's Thursday, October 24, 2019.
As crews battle the flames, two major electric companies are watching the weather.
California utilities announce more widespread preemptive blackouts. Trump's rollbacks of clean air standards are killing Americans. U.S. Supreme Court refuses to block climate liability lawsuit. Plus,
the oil industry's denial campaign placed private corporate interests above the national public interest.
Former Exxon scientists confirm oil giant lied about climate science.
You don't say. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And scientists say humans are entering an extinction period. Ah, well, we had a good run, except for the wars, the slavery, the pollution, and the genocides. Probably for the best, really.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, well, California's super extended wildfire season continues, and California consumers continue to pay the price.
Yes, the National Weather Service has forecast another round of hot, dry, and windy conditions for California, bringing, quote, extremely critical fire conditions across much of the state. So the state's two largest power companies, Pacific Gas and Electric and Southern California Edison, have announced they will again initiate preemptive power outages affecting nearly a million customers to prevent their aging equipment from sparking deadly wildfires.
You know, we paid a lot of money to these electric companies. You'd think they could have buried their wires by now, knowing for years that this is a problem.
City and state officials claim that the utilities may be using the blackouts to avoid liability in place of that long-term expensive fire prevention and maintenance. Customers will have to get used to it. The utility CEO suggests preemptive power outages will likely be an annual occurrence over the next 10 years.
Oh, fantastic. Once again, state of California, by these power companies.
Some big developments in climate liability lawsuits. The U.S. Supreme Court this week refused a bid by the oil industry to place an emergency stay on a lawsuit brought by the city of Baltimore, which is suing 21 oil companies for their role in causing climate change and lying about it.
Good.
Baltimore is seeking damages to pay for the rising costs of climate disasters. There are at least a dozen significant lawsuits against oil companies from cities and municipalities across the U.S. that are underway right now. All are likely headed to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Good.
And climate damages, by the way, are already costly. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, announced that 2019 is the fifth year in a row that the United States has suffered 10 or more climate-related billion-dollar disasters in a single year. That's disasters that cost the U.S. taxpayer more than $1 billion each. Four of those have occurred since May, and 2019 isn't even over yet.
Yeah, but corporate profits are at an all-time high, so there's that.
In Washington, the U.S. House Oversight Committee this week examined the oil industry's decades of deception in lying to the public and attacking climate science. Climate scientist Dr. Marty Hoffert, who worked as a consultant for Exxon in the 1980s, confirmed in his testimony that Exxon executives knew and understood the danger of their product in causing global warming early on, but instead they chose to launch a million-dollar public disinformation campaign to, quote, deliberately confuse the public and lawmakers about coming catastrophic climate impacts.
What they did was wrong. They spread doubt about the dangers of climate change. They deliberately created doubt when internal research confirmed how serious a threat it was. As a result, in my opinion, homes and livelihoods will likely be destroyed and lives lost.
Dr. Hoffert also noted that he and his team accurately predicted decades ago where CO2 levels would be today in 2019. But he also said the impacts are actually arriving faster than they had projected. Finally, a new analysis of Environmental Protection Agency data by Carnegie Mellon University confirms that U.S. air pollution, after years of improvement, is getting worse. The timing coincides with the Trump administration's rollbacks of clean air regulations and with the increase in massive wildfires in the United States. Researchers concluded that the spike in air pollution may have taken the lives of almost 10,000 additional Americans over just the last 2 years.
Through line in all of today's stories, corporations are doing great, making tons of money, and we, the people, are paying the price for it in taxpayer dollars and in our lives. Just happened to notice that. For much more on all of these stories and the many that we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can find, follow, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. And our thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help celebrate our upcoming 1,000th episode of the GNR. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Desi does have a knack for a bumper to close the, you know, the Green News Report, even though that was Billy Joel. Oh, look, it's the boss.
Who's the boss?
You're the boss.
Where? I don't see them.
No, it, you.
Oh.
You're the boss.
Oh, I hear you.
Oh, Bob.
Let me have your cornbread.
It's our anniversary broadcast.
I know, but I try not to horn in on it.
Ah.
Please remind everybody about the event taking place Sunday.
Yes, Jude's stand in El Paso.
Yes, that's very, very important.
Yes, I've had several emails asking to be included.
Very good.
And I have passed them along.
Thank you.
And if anybody else wants to, just send me an email, and Jude will include your name in the stand for morality and peace and conscience in which she is engaging down in El Paso.
And for families to be brought together.
And for, yes, for the reunification of families broken by this monstrosity in the White House. So let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, where Sparky has gathered them all together. And a reminder, yes, the stress line is working. If you can't make Skype work, you can always get into the group via the stress line, 844-843-4676. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
So,
bet you're wondering, how's it going?
Well, I was actually wondering how far you are from the Kincaid fire. That's down toward Napa, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in Sonoma County. They butt up to each other, Napa, Sonoma. So it's near Geyserville.
How much burned so far?
Well, last I heard, 10,000 acres. Just overnight.
Homes lost?
All I know is about a couple structures. There's not too many people there. I mean, there's just like they put out an evacuation for Geyserville. If you live in Geyserville, you should have been gone. But I haven't followed it much, too much. I didn't know what I was doing. I read in the paper that they were going to probably kill the power again this weekend. So I had filled up my generator the other day and tested it, and I had an empty gas can, and I needed some parts to jerry-rig my electrical panel in my wizardly way so I can backfeed it with the generator. So as soon as the power goes down, I'm going to work on the panel and get it set up for the generator and then go from there. But I've got 3 5-gallon gas cans and a brand new bottle of propane. 5-gallon bottle of propane, because I had to go to Home Depot.
Nice. You backwire that, Duncan?
Well, I know how to do it.
You put it through your dryer cord? I mean, your dryer receptacle? That's how a lot of people...
No. I'm going to do it through my shop.
Oh, okay. Nice, man.
I got to fix some stuff in the main electric panel's old. And I forgot how I'd hooked some stuff up in there years ago for my dad. And I got to go in there and change some stuff so it won't backfeed the PG&E when the power comes back on. But I've got it figured out. And hopefully it'll work. And it'll allow me to keep my well going, and we'll be able to watch TV, but I won't have no internet. But I found out about the fire today when I stopped at the gas station. I was filling up the gas can. There was a guy in a big Dodge pickup with a whole bunch of gas cans. And I said, "You getting stocked up for the outage?" And he goes, "No, I'm going deer hunting." says, but I will you be using them gas for a generator when I'm up hunting? And then he says, you hear about that fire over on the coast? And I go, no. And he starts telling me about
it. Is it illegal to deer hunt when deer hunt the deer that are running away from the fire?
Oh, I don't think there's too many deer over there. Because it's mostly wine country there. And it's, you know, just trees and wine country.
Hey guys.
Wild animals.
Hey, that's the only way that Dick Cheney hunts is basically when the deer are running away from the fire, you know? That's how he rolls.
Then just before I was setting all this up, I went into Facebook and I got some sad news from my high school reunion group that has a Facebook page. My best friend back in the day passed away in August. I even talked him into going to the Air Force after me.
Aww.
And he became a firefighter, and he was retired from CDL, Cal Fire. So, because I'd lost touch with him after our 10-year reunion, because he went to Southern California and I was up here, so we didn't stay in contact. But that's my day so far. But and there's hardly any wind here right now.
Well, thank heaven for small favors, right?
Yeah, there was only a small area of the county that they shut off. It's up in the mountains towards Mount Lass. But I guess down south, I mean, I guess Squeaky down Placerville got shut down for a while. In this recent deal.
Well, I noticed Brad brought up the idea of burying the power lines again. That seems to be a persistent question. Is that a geography? I mean, a lot of mountains in California, a lot of rock.
Yeah, well, you can't easily bury the transmission lines, but you can bury the small lower voltage lines, like the primary that feed your houses. You can bury that system underground, but the transmission is harder because you're sending so much voltage across that it needs free air, and the wire size would have to be huge to transmit it underground. And you know the difference between transmission lines and regular lines.
Yeah, transmission lines. Those are the ones that Godzilla walks through.
Yeah, we have the technology to put everything underground, even the power stations. But it's a lot of money and a lot of work, a lot of effort. You know.
Yeah, and even if
a substation underground, it would be hell, Steve.
Right, I get the logistical nightmare, but it could be done theoretically.
Well, you have to cool the transformers somehow. You know what a power station does? It bucks the power up.
You'd have to have big turbine fans. It would be a logistical nightmare, no question.
No. It has big transformers. The power comes in on a line. I mean, it's coming from the power plant, and it goes to a substation, which bucks up the power again to send it back on, because it loses a little bit as it travels, so it has to have these substations to buck it back up again.
Now, let's get back to your situation in particular. Do you have to put a timer on it, like 5 minutes, that will reverse it back and forth, or how do you go about that?
No, it's just not my system. I just got to shut off the main that feeds out of the meter. And then when the power comes back on, I don't know, because I have a smart meter and it starts reading again. It's got a blank screen on it when there's no power. And when the power's back on, it'll start reading.
But hypothetically, if you had both of them coming in and out, could that potentially mess something up, or is that a dumb question, or?
Yes. That's why I got to make sure I turn stuff off. I mean, either that, like, did I mention about the Generalink last week? It's being made in Georgia for for a house meter.
Oh yeah,
no, I don't recall you mentioning that.
Right. Well, I know what he's talking about because I asked. It's like the size of a central air conditioning unit.
No.
It's called a Generax, is what I'm thinking of.
No. Generalink, made in Georgia. It's a thing that plugs into your meter socket. Your meter has to be unplugged. The Generalink plugs in. Then you plug the meter back in. The power company has to seal it back up. Then there's a receptacle in the bottom of the Generalink where you plug in a cord from a 220 generator.
And the damn thing has to be serviced, too, even if you don't use it for 3 or 4 years. You know, you can't just let it sit there and do nothing to it.
The Generalink?
Yeah, the Generax, yeah.
No, I'm not talking
about a Generax.
He's not talking about a generator. He's talking about an interface that lets you plug a generator into your main box.
Well, it goes into
complex.
It's a ring. It's not. It's just one simple unit. You unplug your meter from the power company. You plug the Generalink in. Then you plug the meter back in, and then there's a receptacle on the bottom of the Generalink that you plug a generator into.
You are the analog switch, then, more or less.
When you plug the generator in, and there's videos online of this, when you plug the generator in, even if you've got the power on, it'll switch. You'll hear a click in the thing, because it'll switch the generator. Nice. So you need, when power comes back on, all you need to do is go out there and see the power's back on and turn your generator off, and then it'll switch back to your power company. But if it's
interesting.
Home Depot, a 30-amp one costs like $755.
Then you have to justify that. Do you lose enough power to make that kind of investment? You know, it's
you lose one freezer's worth of food. You've paid for it.
Yep, absolutely. Or like Squeaky was saying, if you know something's coming, you got to get a bunch of dry ice. But you know, then you're just rolling the dice, man.
Well, when I turn with this way, I'm going to hook my, I'm not going to run a whole bunch of stuff in the house. Just two refrigerators. And hopefully I'll be able to use, the well will work. And we'll have water. And then I power up my dish receiver just so we can have TV. But we will have no internet when the power goes off.
Not until they get 5G rolling, and then you'll have it, you know, if it ever makes it to Red Bluff.
Well, I mean, Wi-Fi, I don't have a Wi-Fi system. I have a hardwired cable system.
Right.
From Spectrum Cable.
But eventually everything's going to be in the air. I think they're going to do away with wires, and we're getting there now. My televisions don't have any cable, hardwired cable. It's all comes to 300 megabytes per second modem, you know. But that's in the future, and that's not about the Horniverse.
Well, you got a fiber optics line coming into your house. It runs your modem, and then your TV runs off your modem, right?
Yes, but there's no wire connected to the modem whatsoever. It's got a receiver box that hooks into the TV. And nine times out of ten, it works great until there's like the World Series and everybody's watching the same thing at one time. Then it sits there and buffers like the old Netflix days, you know. It can be frustrating.
Well, I've got smart TVs in two of the rooms of the house that are connected by Wi-Fi to watch Netflix and Amazon. And
nice.
I got a 55-inch Roku TV in the main room the theater room, as I call it.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, it blew my mind. I was in the store the other day. The prices for these things have become ridiculous, and I don't mean high.
The other way.
A 65-inch TV for $400. Yeah, wow.
Unless Orange's tariffs go through, then that's going to change. You know, you got 30% of that.
Well, I didn't need a 65-inch TV.
I have a piece of
furniture that I was looking at that I want to set a TV on that I bought. And it's just perfect for a 55-inch TV. So that's why I bought a 55-inch TV. I've got it from Best Buy because I wanted to get rid of an old Morphe-type TV. I think I talked about this once. When I got the new big screen TV, we got rid of this old CRT TV that my parents watched Fox News on. It had the ghost of Bill O'Reilly in it, and I wanted to get it out of the house.
It probably had the ghost of Bill O'Reilly ghosted onto the tube, didn't it?
Yeah, it's like one of those consoles, like furniture almost, man. Almost solid state.
Yeah, the only thing we saved was the little stand that it sat on. They hauled that big old monstrosity off. I had to pay an extra fee for it, but it was worth it.
Probably weighed 500 pounds, didn't it?
Well, I don't know about that, but it took two guys to get it out of the house.
Yeah. I remember my dad was so excited. It was back in the late 90s, mid-90s. Biggest TV he'd ever owned. It was a 36-inch CRT Zenith.
Oh, that thing weighed a ton, didn't it?
Yes. But, you know, he was a tough guy way up into his 70s. And him and me slogged that thing into the living room and set it up. And he said, this is better than sitting in Mountaineer Field. We were watching a Mountaineer game.
I used to work for a rent-to-own company, and we would rent those out. They were really hot around Super Bowl time, but God damn, I probably popped a few vertebrae on that goddamn things, you know. They did. They were heavy.
So are you watching? Am I the only one that's watching the World Series, or are others?
I don't take the World Series.
You're not getting the cowbell for that, Steve.
I don't really care about baseball that much.
Well, just watching Verlander get shelled like he did last night, I mean, that just doesn't happen. And
the only time I get baseball hot and heavy was when I was in grade school and stuff, and then later on when the Oakland A's were winning the World Series a lot in the 70s. And then I watched when San Francisco was winning their, the Giants were winning. I used to get sick every year when the World Series was on. I didn't fake it. I swear to God, I used to get the flu or something. I'd have to stay home and I'd watch the World Series. My earliest recollection of a World Series is the 1960 World Series. I think the Yankees played the Pirates.
Yeah, Mazeroski.
Yeah, they had a walk-off home run or something.
Yeah. My earliest World Series memory is the 1970 series with the Reds and the O's, and just being utterly disgusted by the way that the Reds just, you know, because that was a big red machine, and they just got manhandled.
Man. Well, Brooks Robinson, Rob Lee May during that series. I don't remember
Robinson. Well, he was the MVP of it, wasn't he?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, number five. Yeah. In fact, I got a signed jersey of his hanging in my room. Him.
And see, you mentioning the A's championship run, Sparky, reminded me of something I thought about watching the game last night. And I guess it's been in effect for a while. I don't know exactly how long, but it used to be if you wanted to intentionally walk a batter, you had to intentionally walk a batter. You had to throw the four pitches. You know, the catcher sticks his arm out to the right, and the pitcher throws the ball way outside the strike zone.
They should have never did away with that, because that I've seen that foul up before.
Well, that's why I'm raising the issue, because they're not an issue, but the memory. I remember when Sal Bando was the catcher for the A's, and Johnny Bench, the Reds were playing the A's in the series. Johnny Bench stands in, and I forget who was pitching. Maybe it was Catfish Hunter. But Sal Bando sticks his arm out, and the way it had set up, it had been a decision to go ahead and walk him after he'd thrown a few pitches. Sticks his hand out, gets ready to step out, then squats back in behind the plate. Bench has got the bat on his shoulder, and the pitcher just lobs one straight down the middle, called third strike, get out of here. And Johnny Bench was my hero.
They did that to speed the game up, Bob.
Well, obviously. But that's bullshit.
Bullshit.
But then I'm a little bit of a purist. Fucking hate the designated hitter.
Yeah, I never did like that either.
Get in there and play the damn game.
Pitchers can hit. If you can't hit, then you shouldn't have a job. You know, it's a two-part game.
Well, nobody expects a pitcher to have a 400 batting average. But there's a big difference between a pitcher who can lay down a perfect bunt down the third base line, and one who can't. And every now and then, when a pitcher puts one out of the park. Yeah, that's exciting, and that they took that all away from the game, in the name of extending the careers of washed up hitters. Yeah,
but is it designated hitter rule in effect for all the games? The alternator.
No,
it used to depend on what field you were playing.
Right,
at
it's in it. It's in, it's in it. Yep. It was in effect in Houston. It won't be in effect for the three games, or hopefully just two, in D.C.
And that casts a slight advantage to a team, in my opinion.
Well, it operates to the disadvantage of the American League team when pitchers have to stand in.
They're not used to hitting. They never have the whole season. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I think I remember. I can't remember the ace that was on the Giants during the World Series runs a few years ago, but he used to bang him out of the park when he'd bat.
The guy with the long hair. Can't remember his name now. Had a completely different throwing motion.
Mad Bum? Bumgarner, guys?
No.
Bumgarner, yeah. He used to hit home runs.
Yeah.
And a pitcher that could field, they're going away the dodo bird, too. I mean, I remember Jim Palmer used to scoop anything that came up the middle. I don't care how fast it was hit. He had such good reflexes. He could get it. He could snuff it, man. You don't see much of that anymore.
And here's a great analogy coming from Jack in Shreveport. Walking a batter, subject line. So now it's like the Senate. Nobody has to stand there and read something to filibuster. Just one POS has to say they want to do it, and the entire country gets to go without whatever it is that's in the bill. Precisely.
The first time I ever seen that was softball, ladies softball, which I like to watch, but that's the first time I ever seen that. I'm like, what the hell? What do you mean you're not pitching four down and outs,
Well,
you can't fuck up doing that.
You can fuck up doing that, but I think all in all, that's one of the rules I like, because it was a waste of time when you do intentional walks and you just intentionally throw four balls. And I mean, how often does somebody throw a wild pitch in that situation? Maybe once every
100 times.
100 times?
But that 100 time might be in the World Series. That might make it,
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean,
I'm a purist, man.
Yeah, same here. And you know, I am too.
I don't like the DH rule either. Yep. I mean, it's the only reason guys like Harold Baines are in the Hall of Fame, for example. He played 9 years.
Oh, well said.
DH. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's in a way a fallacy, is that it slows the game down or it takes too much time. I think one of the problems is with TV today, there are so goddamn many commercials compared to the way it used to be even 30 years ago.
Good point, Scott.
You know? And plus all the goddamn promos and, you know, the batter is steps out of the box and is adjusting something. And, the guy in the booth says, well, the only time now for just time for a quick word from, and it's at like a 7 second spot that they don't even break away from the field. They squeeze the picture out of the field and put the blurb on for the commercial, and it's a 7 second commercial. They sell everything.
They do that on every sport now.
Yeah, but the thing is, unlike basketball, unlike football, unlike hockey, unlike soccer, unlike just about any other game there is, the magic of baseball is it's a game without a clock. And if you're going to a baseball game or if you're watching a baseball game, this business about how slow or how fast the game is a specious, it's a specious argument because there's no clock. It is supposed to be and was sort of designed and evolved as, yes, athletically challenging. I mean, anybody just standing in the box and watching a 90 mile an hour ball go by you is harrowing. Having to stand in and swing at it's another thing altogether. But it's a game that was it was developed with an element of leisure to it.
Yes, pastoral.
Yeah. Good word.
It's as calming, relaxing, and laid back as an old woman sitting on a porch with her apron on, shelling peas.
Or knitting.
There's no race.
While listening to baseball on the radio. Yes.
Yeah. But well, I just don't like the fact that, and see, I don't watch it very often. This is probably the first time I've watched a baseball game for several years. And it took me the first game sitting here. Well, first of all, it's on Fox, which I don't like that to begin with. And then I'm sitting here watching, and there are so many graphics down in the right-hand corner of the screen. It's like it almost takes away the function of the announcer. Because if I can sit there and look at a little graphic that has one base lit up and the number one for outs, and two for strikes and one for
you don't
balls.
Even have to listen to the jerk behind the microphone.
And no. Now you brought me to this point, the jerk behind the microphone. If I had a dollar for every time Joe Buck used the word filthy to describe a pitch,
I
a batter's
that.
Hair.
Yeah.
Or Harry Carey or Skip Carey. Yeah.
I'm not the only one. And I just, the only reason I'm watching it is the historical factor that tomorrow night will be the first time since 1933 that a D.C. ball team has hosted a World Series game. And I want Texas to get their ass handed to them so bad that they will not
Houston?
Be able to see or sit. Yeah, Houston. The whole state.
Yeah, which is another hot mess. I'm old and cranky now. What the fuck is Houston doing in the American League? I mean, it's been that way for a while.
Not that long.
I mean, I remember when the Brewers were in the American League.
Yep.
Yep.
But right. I also, while we're nailing our theses to the door, Martin Luther like, I didn't like, largely, and my dad was the same way, I didn't like the introduction of interleague play. Because
I didn't either, Bob, at first, but but there are certain rivalries, like, well, the Dodgers and the Angels, the White Sox and the Cubs, the Yankees and the Mets, that you never get to play unless it's a World Series.
Asians and the Giants, exactly.
And let me piggyback that by saying I don't even know how I feel about instant replay yet. I'm not sold on it.
And you know, Jimmy in the Great Northwest makes a good observation as far as the intentional base on balls and not making him throw the pitches. That goes to the pitcher's pitch count, and every pitch has an impact on the pitcher's arm. So.
So how do you all feel about instant replay in baseball? I'm not sold on it.
Well, I tell you one. I mean, I'm kind of grateful for the strike zone box because you get a good idea, and that's not instant replay, of course, but at least you get an idea of how subjective the strike zone is.
It is, and it depends on who the umpire is. Some umpires call a lot of like outside strikes, or they don't. You know.
How do you mean instant replay, Steve? Because there's the replay that Fox does, and this I also found out. Not only are there like five or six umpires on the premises, but there's one up in some office.
Right.
In
New York. You can challenge a call now.
New York decides instant replay calls.
It used to be what the umpire said was final. That was it. And, you know, like it, lump it, or leave it, you had to live with that. And that was part of the element of the game that.
Benches went empty, and they would get right up in one another's face.
And the manager would get out there and start kicking dirt on the umpire's shoes. And that was fun, you know.
Well, there's chaos on the field.
And meanwhile, I forget who the college football coach is. But one of them last week got himself fined $5,000 because he tweeted. And they asked him about the officiating during the post-game press conference. He said, I'm not going to get fined. What, do I look stupid? I'm going to keep my mouth shut and hold on to my money. But then his frustration got the better of him, and he tweeted a photo of the officiating crew walking around the football field with dark glasses and sticks and seeing eye dogs. And so he got hit for $5,000.
Well, there was a. Did you see? I don't know if I sent it to you or not, but I put it on my Facebook. There was an umpire that got into hot water recently for tweeting.
Yeah, that was in the filibobster. Late to the game this evening, are we?
Yeah. Well, that's my question. Did I sleep through Thursday? Is it Friday already?
No, it's Thursday. This is the Horn of.
Oh God!
This is Wednesday. Stop it! This is the Horn of. This is the Horniversary porch.
Oh, a happy Horniversary!
Played that too.
Well, then fuck me. I'll just hang up now.
done by special.
Listen
request.
To the podcast, Scotty.
Oh, and by the way, Sparky, you've got a note from Lady B. Lady B says, please let Sparky know I hope his electricity isn't off for too long. I love it when he calls into the front porch. That slow, stoner baritone reminds me of the days when I worked with guys with voices that made men puff out their chests and women mail them their panties. Sorry about your friend, buddy. I'm sure his life was made much cooler by knowing you. Take care, man. That's just sweet. So you got that going for you, Sparky. You got fan mail from Lady B. Yeah.
And yes, you do have fans in radio who will mail their panties. That is a true thing.
There's another backstory to that, but I don't want to tell it.
Okay.
To my friend. Yeah. It's kind of a grief deal that happened when we were in high school.
Yeah.
So... I had one thing. I had the best leave road trip, the two of us. We both went on leave, and we did a road trip from Red Bluff to San Diego and then back all the way up the coast on Highway 1. Slept on a beach in a little town called Harmony on the Southern California coast. Got up and drove all day through San Francisco, up Highway 1, through Fort Bragg and everything, and over to 101, and we got to where Highway 36, which is a windy ass narrow road that comes over the Coast Range back to Red Bluff, and we couldn't find a gas station open. So we had an Opel GT with the flip out bug eye deals. It was orange. And we thought, should we risk it? We had like, I don't know how much gas it showed, but we decided we'll coast down the other side. Which we did. Both of us took turns driving through there, and we got back into Red Bluff at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was starting out all the way on that beach in Harmony, California, in Southern California. I mean, an all day drive. We left. I mean, we woke up with the sun come up on that beach and got the hell out of there and started driving. That was the best road trip of my life.
Oh, it sounds it.
Because going down to San Diego, we were breaking the speed limits, and we had binoculars. I was watching out for CHP out the rear window with binoculars as we were flying down the highway. Never forget that. And we stopped seeing his brother in San Diego, who's in the Navy, and then we saw another guy from high school that was in going to UC San Diego, and then we went on down to visit his. He had cousins that lived in San Diego, and he had a girl cousin that was younger than us, and she took us to Marine World, and we had a hell of a time. And we went to Disneyland on the way back.
Oh, which, by the way, has a measles scare. No, I mean, that's a real sharp turn on it for an issue, but did you has it been in the news out that way that there's a measles alert?
Oh, we've had cases all over the place.
There is also a swine alert out in China where we get a lot of our swine from. Like 70% of them have this awful, awful disease, and if it happens to be in the bone and you like feed it to your dogs or you accidentally.
We're getting pork from China. I thought we exported pork.
Yeah, I was on the wrong end of that one, too. I thought when they bought Smithfield that it was all going to be exported from the U.S. But
that's what I heard yesterday. But apparently, maybe I'm wrong.
Apparently they're shipping the butchered pigs to China for processing and then sending them back here. I mean, it's from a. You know, from a climate change, from an energy standpoint, it seems just stupid. And, well, of course, you know, look, remember, the Chinese have managed to poison baby food, dog food, baby formula. So, yeah.
Yeah, I heard about the baby formula, like 90% of it's full of mercury or
melamine.
Melamine. And if I'm wrong with any of this, please correct me. You know, I'm just spitballing off the top of my head, you know, just things I hear throughout the day. But, man, I mean, that's concerning, especially if you eat a lot of pork, you know. And
I'll tell you something I've been looking for, because I'm slowly, and we'll transition into the food porn portion of the program. I've been slowly gathering together all the necessary ingredients for making homemade ramen stock or ramen broth.
Nice.
And it is a surprisingly complex process. And you got to have things like little dried shrimp and little tiny dried sardines and dried bonito flakes and dried shiitake mushrooms. And those things, they just don't have those up at the Wiggling Pig, guys. So I'm ordering them when I find them. But The best part of the ramen for me, the two best parts, one is the seasoned egg, the seasoned soft-boiled egg, which I've taught myself to love. And the other part is what's called the chashu pork, which is made out of pork belly. But I can't find anywhere that I can get a pork belly that hasn't already been seasoned and smoked and turned into bacon. because there's I've been watching these videos on how to do it all, and there's a very specific process by which you do that chashu pork, and you can't start with a slab of bacon. So I got to find some way of getting an untreated pork belly.
Where's the closest butcher to you, Bob?
Maybe Beckley, Charleston. I don't even know if I could get it there, though.
Wow.
You got to have chicken feet and pork trotters and pork neck bones. And the one thing that drives me crazy, because I hate waste, is that in making this tonkatsu broth, they never say there's meat on those pork neck bones. And so they cook it and cook it, and I mean, hours and hours and hours. And then they get their broth, and you never hear what happened to the pork neck bones or the meat on the pork neck bones. And the idea of just throwing that away makes me crazy. I don't know. Maybe
that's what dogs are for.
Maybe you pick the meat off of them and grind it up and put them in little gyoza dumplings or something. That'd work.
Don't they have 4-H in West Virginia? Don't kids grow or raise pigs and stuff like that?
But I mean, you got to go to you got to go to an auction for them and stuff.
Do they still print yellow pages out your way, Bob?
Nah, not really.
Yeah, but I know my local butcher shop here does
pork bellies are
does a lot. Does a lot of the animals from the county fair after they're shown.
Yeah, yeah. The same one butcher. With the ghost pepper cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because I walked in there one day and I asked him if he had beef neck bones. And he says, not at the moment, but he says, I will have if you want to see. And he walked me through the double doors to the back of the butcher shop into the walk-in freezer. It was right after the county fair. He opened the freezer and there's just all this meat hanging in there. And he said, I'll save you some. We got to get through all this stuff first. For people, but see, they buy some of the meat too, but most of it has been, you know, purchased at the fair by other buyers, and then they slaughter it and pack it and everything, butcher it, and ship it out.
Congratulations!
Uh-huh. Ralph's just sent me a link to D'Artagnan.com, pork belly, bone in, skin on. Okay. Well, that's gonna be a help down the road, because I'm absolutely determined to make this. And the other thing that's coming up, it's almost cool enough now for me to make the incredibly complicated from scratch chili. And I just and thanks to Clarity and a couple other folks, I've got plenty of dried chili pods now, and I can do the chili sauce from scratch, and get the brisket and smoke it with the oregano and the cumin and all of that stuff on it, and the garlic and make my from scratch chili with the Mayakoba beans and tomatoes, and it's hot, but it's good. The only way I know to make it, though, is just a huge pot of it. So I wind up, you know, putting it in sealable bowls and giving it away, and people seem to enjoy it.
So, Bob, you said the World Series. We were watching the World Series.
Yeah.
I'm on Fox, and they've got the football game getting ready to start.
Oh, no, that's tonight. No, last night and the night before were game one and game two. And tomorrow night's game three in D.C.
Got it.
And I really do. I hope if it goes to game five and Trump shows up, I hope he is really – booed so loudly that you can hear it on the International Space Station. I want him to feel worse there than he's felt since Barack Obama made him look about 2 inches tall back at the White House Correspondents Association dinner.
Amen.
But But then again, the tickets may be so damned expensive that the only people who'll be able to afford them are wealthy DC types.
Yeah.
Yeah, the tax cut. They got the tickets to the ball game thanks to the tax cut.
And I wonder if, you know, I have this morbid sense of curiosity about whether Brett Kavanaugh will go. The last time I was at, and this tells you how long it's been because he passed away. The last time I was at a Nats game in D.C., I saw Charles Krauthammer toddling around.
I thought he was in a wheelchair.
He was.
Oh, all right.
How long has he been gone?
A couple of years.
Two years, I don't know.
My thoughts exactly, Scott. He wasn't toddling. I mean,
see, Bob, here's the deal with food, okay? When I have a BLT, I don't think about the farm fresh tomatoes and the coming out of the earth and all that. I don't think of the lettuce growing the way lettuce grows. I certainly don't think of where bacon comes from. You know, and now you've introduced the notion of chicken's feet into the
Do you know why you use the chicken feet?
Well, that I don't want to know. I don't even want the. I see these poor little feathered bastards on these floor-bound carts being ambulating themselves along with their little wings.
All right,
we
won't talk about frog legs either, I guess.
Yeah, well, there you go. You get the point.
Scott, I'm going to get you started on Brunswick stew and its origin.
Well, I'm going to tell you, this is payback for finally wresting out of me the reading of the end of Charles the Bad. By the way, Charles the Bad was a big hit with the Horn Family Community Congregation the other night. I think he's provided his end provided some solace to the community in terms of. Sometimes bad things do happen to bad people the way they ought to. But so because of that, I'm going to tell you why the chicken feet. And the answer to why the chicken feet is for the same reason as the pork trotters. Bueller? We disconnected for a moment.
You just fasten them onto your feet, Scott. That's how it works.
No, both the chicken feet.
You do the chicken walk.
Both the chicken feet and the pork. Both the chicken feet and the pork and the pork trotters, you use because there's a whole lot of gelatin content in them.
Okay.
And provides a thickening and body to the broth.
So have any of you guys ever gone to dim sum?
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, they don't usually roll the carts around with this, the chicken feet, but it's one of those off-menu items. So you can if you grab the lady and you're like, hey, you know, I really want some chicken feet, they'll cook that up for you for the dim sum.
And can I tell you a little-known fact?
What's
that? The knee grease I'm getting injected into my knee orthovisc is made with chicken feet.
Ooh.
Well, I'll see.
If you ever get hungry.
Yeah, it makes it
so
nice.
So if you don't have
makes it nice and slickety.
I got one more injection to go.
So if you don't have health insurance, you can just grab some chicken feet and do some work on your knee?
He starts laying eggs. I'm getting out of here.
I have Medicare, and Medicare pays for almost all of it, and I get the injections every 6 months.
That's a good thing. You don't have to stir it up in the old hot tree.
Yeah, the only thing is when you go to use the chicken feet for your ramen broth, You do have to remember, and Scott's going to love this, you have to remember to clip off their little toenails.
Ooh. Oh, God.
Wouldn't it be easier just to go get some ramen noodles and save up a bunch of them packets and presto, you got broth?
Well, no.
I can see that shit's nothing but salt. During the preparation, you got your little bag of chicken feet, and you pour them out on the counter, and you turn to get something out of the fridge, and they walked away, you know? Gives me the fucking EBGBs, Bob. Come on now.
Well, Bob, what's that you always say about the maggots using their toenail?
Oh yeah, right. I was thinking that was a growth industry. I could clip the nails off the chicken feet and maybe put them into the food dehydrator and sell them as maggot toothpicks.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That's American Cowbell for Chris, if I ever heard it.
Oh, hey, Steve, that reminds me. You remember I told you after the Molloy Mountain Fest last June, Chris and I had stopped for dinner at a Korean barbecue. God, I think it was somewhere like Cumming or something like that.
Was Cumming. I remember.
Did you and Miss Karen ever try that place?
No, we need to.
You really, that just reminded me, you really, really do, because it was so good. And for it to just be sitting there in Cumming, Georgia, but I mean, you know, you got the little grill in the center of the table.
Right, that's his niche. That was his niche. I remember, I was trying to think what it was.
The super thin sliced brisket and round steak and all the sauces and the veggies and you're rolling it up in romaine lettuce and stuff. Oh, it's delicious. Absolutely delicious.
I bet.
And you can't beat the value.
Steve, you live fairly near civilization. There's bound to be a decent Asian restaurant that serves some respectable ramen. The difference between a real bowl of ramen and those hateful little packs with the flavor boost pouches.
Is there 10 cents a pack?
Oh, yeah, and I mean, a million light years between them.
Yeah, I bet. Hey, there was a time when I didn't have two nickels rubbed together. I'd live on them things.
Oh, you know? We got really creative with packages of ramen noodles back in college. Yep. I mean, we'd build like spaghetti sauces around them and, you know, make spaghetti meat sauce out of chopped up Vienna sausage and things like that.
Nice. So, Dennis, how you been, brother? Haven't talked to you in a while.
Are you talking to me, Chris?
Yeah, Chris. I'm sorry, man.
Oh, that's okay. Name's confused. Yeah, I'm doing, you know what? I took the dog out to the ocean, and so I'm here in Seaside, beautiful Seaside, Oregon, if anyone's been here before. And I'm just kind of being lazy, not doing anything today. It was a long drive, and I had to work at 4 in the morning this morning, so I think we're just going to take it easy and get a full day at the beach.
It's good to hear from you, brother. It's been a while, nice. Man.
So is the weather still halfway decent?
It's amazing today. It's absolutely incredible. I think it's going to be a really gorgeous weekend.
It was gorgeous today, too, in the mountains. It's going to be a gorgeous weekend, except for Sunday is a wash, but, you know.
Well, we had two beautiful days here, and tomorrow the clouds move in and the rain starts.
No.
You got to take the bad with the
good. We could use some of your rain, Bob.
Yeah, no kidding. I would gladly do. But you know what? We need it too. This may sound kind of strange, but we've got this house sits right on top of an underground spring. And so it has always leaked in the lowest part of the basement. And we've been without rain so much that underground spring has receded. And the basement is almost what you would call dry.
It's nice to have a dry basement.
It doesn't happen.
Oh, my God.
But that's how droughty it's been around here. What, Sparky?
It's going to be 90 degrees here tomorrow.
Yeah, I've seen that, bro. I've seen that.
I miss that. Hey, it's that heat, 90s, man. Where I miss it.
Yeah, especially with no air conditioning.
It's high of 94 here in Inland Orange County today with Santa Ana winds. So
Rick, you're nowhere near these fires, is that correct?
Oh, no, I'm far south, Southern Cal. Yeah, these fires are in, I think, Sonoma County.
Yeah,
I think I saw. on the news.
Oh, it's a it's a pleasant 68 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion right now.
Oh my God,
Rick, I got a question for you. I want to pick that brilliant legal mind of yours.
Well, you can try me. I don't know about the other part, but go ahead.
How many laws were broken yesterday when they busted into that secret? You know, it was more. It's like a grand jury room with their cameras. And the sergeant at arms said, "Give me your cameras," and they said no. Couldn't they have been arrested for that? I mean,
no.
I mean, I think at least a couple that I can think of. I mean, it's probably a criminal trespass because those folks didn't have a right to be there.
And to film something like that, isn't that a felony?
There's something that gets in the way of all of that. The speech and debate clause.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was handled pretty well by the Democrats because the Republicans were trying to get a big photo op with it, and I think it kind of fell flat for them because they didn't get arrested.
Well, when your brain trust is led by Louis Gohmert, Mo Brooks, Les Brains, and Matt Gaetz, Steve Scalise,
that ain't even close to room temperature IQ if you add all those folks together,
right?
And, you know, multiply their so-called intelligence. You know, yeah.
And what kind of pictures does Trump have on Lindsey? I mean, one day he's saying, "Well, if you show me that there's proof that he's committed treason, then I'll get behind impeachment."
No, no,
oh, okay.
Proof. No, Steve, that's what made it even dumber. He said proof of a crime. And that, too, is another one of those Republican talking points now. Well, I ain't seen no proof of a crime.
And then the next day, he's going along with that hateful, I don't even want to say it, that thing about the rope, you know. It is, you know. That son of a bitch. I mean, thanks to Pentland, South Carolina, for this
like I said last night, they are displaying their ignorance of the Constitution. And if you don't have any idea what the Constitution says, then your oath to uphold and defend and protect it is effectively meaningless. How can you uphold or protect or defend something that you have no idea what it is? That's like me saying that I will, you know, I'll uphold and protect and defend the Hope Diamond. Well, hell, I'm nowhere near the Hope Diamond. I can swear that all day long, and it's a meaningless oath. But look, I mean, the best example of that is, and let me see if I can find it here. We hadn't heard from, by the way, Ron and Raleigh, subject line, Charles Krauthammer. Ron and Raleigh says, "How long has he been gone, you ask?" Not fucking long enough.
Cowboy.
And Ron adds, "He went on to his long, hot home on June the 21st, 2018.
Mm. When you were talking about seeing Charles Krauthammer wheeling around in the in his wheelchair at the ballpark, the one thing I was thinking of is that song "Motorin'" by Night Ranger.
Oh, God's gonna get me. No.
We're awful human beings.
Motorin'.
Hey, you know what song came to mind when Sparky was talking about his crews looking out the back window with binoculars, head on down the highway, BTO. That came to mind.
Yeah.
I was just going 90-100 miles an hour.
That's not Fragile album was great.
That's not BTO. Yeah. Great,
yeah. Isn't it? What is it?
No,
head on down the highway? No.
Let it roll.
Let it roll. Yeah, I guess that's
no.
That's BTO.
Yeah, that's BTO. I thought he was talking about get your motor running, head out on the highway.
No. That's Steppenwolf. No.
Yeah.
John Kay.
Or how about that CCR song?
But if I remember right, Rick, that was in Santa Barbara area on Highway 101.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You used to be able to cruise really fast on PCH. It's not so easy anymore. A lot more people, a lot more cars, you know.
We were talking about Republican ignorance a moment ago. It's been a long time. It's been a while, not long enough really, since we heard anything from Matt Hot Tub Crime Machine Whitaker. The former acting attorney general.
Yes.
Well, somebody who does
emphasis on acting.
Somebody who works as a booker for Ava Brown Barbie, you know, Laura Ingraham, got him on the program to talk about all these unfair things that's being done to President Trump. There is so much stupid here. We may all lose brain cells and or IQ points just hearing this. Try not, you especially, Rick, might want to get the hockey puck, okay?
Okay. Yeah. Me too.
He still can't catch failed, ball.
And now they're on to the next thing.
Well, and he's, you know, these global elitists, these careerists have made promises to our, and have set in place a world establishment that operated a certain way. And President Trump.
Yeah, none of which is true, by the way. Let's just be clear about that. That's entirely a tissue of pure 200 proof bullshit lying.
Trump has asked questions like, why do we do this way? Why don't people pay? Why doesn't Germany and France, why don't they pay 2% into NATO? And these kind of questions, which, again, has completely upset the apple cart, he is being punished for this. And again, I'm a former prosecutor, and what I know is this is a perfect time for a preliminary hearing where you would say, show us your evidence. What evidence of a crime do you have? I mean, the Constitution.
They don't know how this works, do they, Rick?
He seems to think that this
is not a legal proceeding. It's a political proceeding,
right,
folks.
Exactly. And high crimes and misdemeanors does not mean that there has to be some a violation of some statute. Once again, it is a term of art from the 18th century that apparently these goons are utterly clueless about. it's like Precious Lindsay saying, well, if I see evidence of a crime, I'll consider it. Well, I mean, bribery is a crime.
And this,
but let's just get to the end, because we got to get the stupid.
Two. Okay.
We got to get to the true stupidity, because right. this is going to make Billable Rick hoot like barn owl.
It's like 300 proof stupidity.
Yeah,
200 is not enough.
I mean, you're gonna bark like a dog trying to pass a peach pit, I swear.
Institution, you know, sort of abuse of power is not a crime. Let's fundamentally boil it down to, you know, the Constitution is very clear that this has to be some pretty egregious behavior.
Abuse of power is not a crime. Rick, are you okay?
I think it's okay. So he's saying it's okay to abuse your power, is what he's saying.
Yeah, and abuse of power is not a crime. Abuse of power is the very thing that is the nucleus. It is the sun at the center of the solar system. It is the core of the spiral arm galaxy that is the Milky Way of high crimes and misdemeanors. High crimes and misdemeanors is specifically abuse of power.
Yes.
So nitwit Nero's defenders are out there saying he's guilty as sin, but it's okay.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the process isn't fair.
He's admitting that he abused his power.
Yeah.
When he stood and took the oath with the Richard Nixon Memorial Trick Bible. What's your name?
Wait a minute. The Richard Nixon Memorial Trick Bible.
The pages are all blank. And
that's why the dick are upside down or something.
Yeah, but when he stood there and took the fucking oath, that's what he swore not to do. That's what to preserve and defend.
Yeah, preserve and defend and protect the Constitution means that you will not abuse your power. And Matt, Hot Tub Crime Machine, Whitaker, just said, well, fuck, he abused his power. No big deal.
Yeah, yeah. And he's right, though. The Constitution is very clear, you know, but it's not clear in the way he thinks it's clear. It's clear in the opposite way. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, as James in Illinois points out, the lies and the liars, they're catapulting the propaganda. It's aimed at the stupid people, getting them riled up. Yeah, you know, when you've got Major League Baseball umpires to the point that they're ready to turn around and blow away the box seats over by the third baseline, I'd say mission accomplished.
Well, you know, the Bob, the way I see this, this is all laying the seeds and the fertile ground of the unitary executive, right? They want to completely do away with balance, you know, balance of power. They just want a unitary executive. That's what
they
want.
I'd feel a lot better if they wanted a unitarian executive.
No, yeah. That's not what they have in mind.
Almost got a cowbell there, Bob. Not quite.
That was a little too easy.
And the other thing is, so I caught that first part of the clip with the global elitist, right?
Yes.
So, okay, tell me who was a global elitist? Koch brothers, Mercers.
No! Freeze, they're freedom loving Americans. Christopher, you're a global elitist, and I'm a global elitist. Scott and Steve and Sparky and Billable Rick, they're all global elitists because we actually believe in constitutional governance.
What's the emoluments clause?
the phony one. Yeah.
I mean, this candidate, you know, I thought he'd start talking about the black helicopters from the UN the way he was going, you know? What a nut. Yeah.
But it's like music to the maggot ears. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
Can I get petty just for one second?
Laura, as long as you need to.
Laura Ingraham, what the fuck is wrong with her lips? She can't close her mouth, man. She can. I mean,
she's got a fish hook caught in that. Come on, have some sympathy, Steve.
I know, and I don't mean to, you know, throw on her like that. That's wrong on my part.
Well, that's why, you know, when I ran the clip of our little nutmeg over on The View, telling Matt Gaetz to go and get a TV job, that's why I said, but Matt, please stay away from the Cheetah Prince.
Oh, yeah. Not a good look.
Only thing I can think of is some kind of Botox procedure went horribly awry, man.
Could have been. Yeah.
Laura Ingraham's probably had so many facelifts that when she raises her eyebrows, her pantyhose come up.
She's had her face lifted so many times that is not a dimple in her chin. That's her navel, which is why you don't want her to open her shirt collar.
But Scott, her lips won't close. Check it out next time you see.
I know.
Are the horn ladies all hating us right now?
Probably.
Oh, by the way,
I hear?
No. That's some. No, I was wondering who that was too. But Kyle sent a note a little while ago. Said, speaking of brains misfiring, my maggot father's response to a claim from that Fox News judge that said Trump is probably obstructing justice. Some local right-wing talker had the judge on, was to say, what justice? And it may have accidentally been the truest thing to ever come out of a maggot's mouth. What justice?
That's true. Hey, speaking of attack blondes, whatever happened to Ann Coulter? I haven't heard about her in a long time.
Anybody know? Well,
do you really want to hear from her?
No, I don't.
Yeah, and see, if you say it two more, if you say her name two more, hey, Rick, brother, I just have to warn you. If you say her name two more times, she's going to appear right there sitting next to you. And then you'll never be rid of her.
It's like Beelzebub or whatever, Beelzebub.
As soon as she finishes writing another book, she'll be on Bill Maher.
Well, there you go. Trust me. Right. Yeah, she's buddies with Bill. I forgot about that. Yeah. As if the conservatives need another platform to broadcast from, right?
No, she goes out on the circuit hawking her books. So
exactly. That's the name of her game, exactly. Yeah,
because she can get a booking on there anytime she wants, I think.
Right.
But see, she fell out of favor because she criticized the God Emperor.
That she did. Yeah. Yeah, she's in maggot purgatory right now for that, I think.
Well, Halloween's coming right up, so she's going to be crawling out of her crypt at some point.
There you go. Oh, yes, with the worms coming out of her nose and eyes and everything else, right?
Oh, and here's a fun little... Well, no, it's a sad story. It begins with sadness, but it has a happy ending. Some guy and his dad were at one of Donald Trump's sleazy New Jersey golf courses, the one in Colts Neck, New Jersey. And the bartender there just kept serving and serving and serving and serving him. And a guy named Andrew G. Halder went out, got in his car with his dad, got in a wreck, and killed his own father. Well, the state of New Jersey, the Attorney General's office, has served notice on that golf club that because they overserved Andrew G. Halder to the point that he killed his daddy in a DUI wreck, they're going to pull. Well, yeah, I've talked in the past about, you know, being grown up in the South, I grew up in a dry county. That means a county where you can't sell alcohol. Well, the Colts Neck, New Jersey Trump Golf Club is about to become a dry golf club. Golf clubs that can't serve booze don't do very well. And so they've already been served notice that their liquor license is going to be revoked. But here's the fun part. There's a wrinkle. In the state of New Jersey, if someone owns multiple liquor licenses, and they get their license revoked in one establishment, guess what? They get revoked their liquor all. Licenses revoked in all of their establishments.
That's
so what,
great.
So whether it's Colts Neck or Bedminster, you know, the Summer White House, yeah, all of those, and there's that Joe Buck word, all those filthy properties are going to be dry properties.
Oh, jeez.
And their value will sink like a stone unless the Trump Organization sells them so that a different liquor licensee can own them.
That's nice. That's nice.
I love that story.
I wonder if the golfers can circumvent that rule by bringing like their own like 12 packs of beer or White Claw or whatever it is they want to drink while they're shooting around. That's what I want to know, Bob.
BYOB?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess that kind of depends on the state laws on open containers and whatnot.
Yeah.
And by the way, while we're at it, I've heard about the White Claw craze. The hell is White Claw?
It's a malt liquor, Bob. It's like Truly. You know what Truly is? It's a competitor.
I saw somebody drinking one of those.
It's pretty good. Give it a try.
Is it like Zima?
Might be. I'm not sure. What's Zima?
You don't remember
or like
Zima?
Mickey's?
No.
Remember Mickey's, the big mouse?
Yeah, but Mickey's tasted like beer. Apparently, yeah. White Claw and Truly and stuff doesn't taste like beer.
No, it's very refreshing.
Mm.
You can hardly tell you're drinking alcohol. That's
well, what's
the problem.
What's the percentage by volume?
5%.
Huh.
Yeah.
Zima, that was like the precursor to Bartles and James, wasn't it, Bob?
No, Bartles and James was pre-existing. Zima was just a clear malt beverage with a light
right.
fruit.
It tasted like ass. Yeah,
yeah, it was disgusting. I remember a mock-up ad for it that said Zima, something disgusting.
Tastes like ass.
Well, there went dinner in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone.
Also, Franzia.
Oh, that's like with wine, isn't it? Like a wine cooler or something like that?
Yeah, Boone's Farm was the, early.
Sparky, don't you buy that stuff in the box, the Franzia? You buy that in the box, right?
Franzia. Yeah.
No, used to be able to buy it in a bottle. My wife drank them all the time.
I remember the Bartles and James.
Well, and the thing is, you know who Bartles and James were? That was the big inside joke at... I think it was made by Gallo Wineries.
Thank you for your support.
Yeah, you know who Bartles and James really were?
I have no idea. All I know
the owner's dogs.
Oh, okay. Jeez. I would take like a shot of vodka and take a swig and pour it in there and juice them up, man. It's the only way I could drink the damn things.
You're a pro, Steve. Do not try this at home.
No, not unless you want to hurl the next day, man.
I will say this. If you go to Trader Joe's, they have tremendous box wine. There's like three bottles in the box, and it's cheap. And it's very good. And they have...
Well, of course it's very good. It comes from Trader Joe's.
Oh, it's wonderful, and it's super cheap.
Didn't they have two buck chuck for a while?
Yeah, I think they might still have it, but it might be like $3 chuck now. Yeah, good stuff.
Well, there's some wineries burning up over there on the coast in this fire that's happening.
I had a note on the Kincaid fire from Dave out that way. We drove US 128 Tuesday on our way to Napa from Eureka. I commented to my spouse how well PG&E had trimmed back the vegetation from the high tension lines in light of the fact that the eternally wet Humboldt Coast has gotten little attention. We'll be returning home in an entirely different direction today as the Kincaid fire has closed US 128. The meeting with relatives from Healdsburg, Geyserville, and Cloverdale will have to wait. The fire began in a section that burned just a couple of years ago. So much for the rake theory, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they need to rake their forest like the Finns do.
Oh, jeez. Wasn't our buddy Roger formerly a resident of that general area? Humboldt? Is it?
No. Geyserville's in Sonoma County.
No, okay. But Roger was from...
Roger lived on the other side of Eureka.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway...
McKillingville.
We were housed at the west of Napa retreat called Mont de Salle. Wind speeds on the Napa Valley floor were negligible last night, but on top of the hill where we were, the winds were so bad we couldn't sleep. Even though we're pretty much due south of the fire... The northeastern breeze has kept the skies clear for us. That'll probably change by this afternoon. He wrote this earlier today. If things progress, as in other wine country fires, the crews will be able to keep the blaze off the valley floor, not so much for the oak and fir hillsides, the rural homes and ranches, and the tannin-rich grapes that define the vineyards not on the valley floor in this region. I spent all of my 60 years in Northern California. The climate changing is severe here. The grapes ripen too quickly. There's insufficient water for salmon. The redwood trees that are left are experiencing dieback in the crowns. Bark beetles devastate the other conifers that are too water-starved to resist infestation. The kelp forest is dead, and the shoreline aquaculture is collapsing. Our efforts to resist the climate crisis falls far short of having an impact. My wife's employer is considering not having any further conferences in October in wine country due to the risk. They have a $1 billion presence here, but can only think in terms of how to adapt to the change instead of combating it. I live the life of the forcibly retired, engineers being a short-lived career compared to, say, healthcare professional. It gives me plenty of time to write my legislators and such, but to this point, I haven't solved any problems this way. Have a good show. Best wishes for your loved ones. And Dave also asks, my 13th month of subscription is about to arrive. Will that renew via PayPal automatically, or do I need to do something proactively to continue? I don't think you have to do anything, but if you notice it falls out, and if I don't see your name, I'll shoot you a note. Thank you, Dave. Thank you very kindly. You know, there's something within what he wrote, though, that I wanted to make sure I shared the note, because I read a fascinating story not too long back. You'll note Dave says the grapes ripen too quickly. Well, the same thing is happening as a result of climate change all over the world. But in some parts of the world, they've actually been keeping records for a very long time, and they can track it. They've got actual analyzable data points. And there's a village in France that has been keeping track of the wine harvest since like the 1200s or 1300s, and writing down the date that the harvest starts, you know, and all the and these are all notes that were kept by the church, because the church owned a bunch of vineyards. And so you can see in essentially real-time documents, you can see the harvest date getting earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier, to the point that this summer's grape harvest in that region was the earliest that it has ever been. And the thing is, when it's early like that, that affects the quality of the grape, which in turn affects the quality of the wine. And it's not a good effect. It's a bad effect. The grapes need time. But instead, they're ripe way too early, and it means that the vintages take a beating. And because it's an entirely natural product, it's like what Dave was saying, you know, instead of adapting, you have to find some way to combat it. And the only way to combat it is to reduce the carbon. Yeah, go ahead, Christopher.
Well, I was just going to say, if you think about all the fire and all the smoke, that's really going to affect all the vintages in California there, around there.
Yeah.
And there's a great winery called Cafaro that's in Geyserville and that area, and that's where I get my wine delivered. You know, I get it shipped to me twice a year. It's fabulous, but now I'm kind of concerned if they're, you know, they might not, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with this set of fires, and if they're that close, it's not good for the grapes, obviously.
Well, it's about natural rhythms and cycles that have occurred forever. And when something's added to the mix that knocks that off kilter, nature tries to compensate to the extent that it can and will, but it's like something, there's a disturbance in the forest is what I'm saying. And it's not just the growing and the wine regions around the world. It's all sorts of things that could be relied upon for eons. I don't know what that was.
Somebody's echoing.
Somebody just came in the room. I'm going to try and mute him.
Was it Charlie?
I don't know who it is. I got him muted, though.
Oh, and by the way, going back to your comment about Laura Ingraham's mouth, Jack in Shreveport says, hell, that's nothing compared to how fucking irritated I get when I see Daddy's main squeeze, I Wanka, bobbing up and down when she walks. What the fuck is that all about? Yeah, she walks like Elmo. If you've ever seen Elmo, you know, that... Yeah. That's her full name. I Wanka my daddy. I Wanka my daddy.
Just in time for Christmas. Nipply Elmo.
Well, that's pretty disgusting.
Has she ever announced what her, you know, like Barbara Bush, the Quaker Oats first lady, had a reading as her deal, and Barbara Bush did, and Laura Bush had education as her deal, and Lady Bird Johnson had beautification of the highways for her deal. What is Mrs. Trump's deal?
Bullying.
Her pet.
Bullying.
Oh, is that it? Bullying. Yeah. Okay.
It's hilarious. Boy,
the irony is thick, Bob. Give me a bigger knife from your beautifully decked out Horn family mansion kitchen.
Yeah, shall we
I
go
just
back?
Can imagine.
After that, shall we just go back to talking about chicken feet some more?
You have little bins, each with labels saying what's in them. Your spices, your chicken feet bin, your hog jowls, your how many grits, you count them out individually. 1, 2, 3. Anyway.
You use very tiny tweezers for that. By the way, Ron Raleigh says, if we're asking...
It's like George Washington Carver made a stunning discovery 75, 80, 90 years ago that you get milk from a peanut, but you need very nimble fingers and a tiny three-legged stool.
Yes.
So... Back to you, Bob.
Thank you, Scott. Ron and Raleigh says, if we're asking questions, where's Andrew Yang's necktie? Is it in the same closet with Jim Shorts Jordan's suit jacket? Okay. I'm good for it. I'm good for a cowbell on that one. And, okay, so, yeah, Ron sent me a link to White Claw. Eh, I'll at least read up.
I got to see my congressman was part of that group that crashed the strip yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, how could Doug LaMalfa not be? He is a towering intellect. He
stands out in the crowd. God, I want to get rid of that guy so bad.
Well, didn't y'all get close in 2018?
Yeah, closer than we've ever got.
Like a 10-point race or something, Sparky? It was fairly close.
I think she got like 46%.
Okay.
She's one of the gal that ran against him is like a Justice Democrat. So I don't know if she's going to again. I haven't heard. I can't remember her name now.
Oh, and by the way, big credit to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for what she did to Mark Zuckerberg yesterday. Did y'all catch that clip?
Yeah, I did. It was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, yes. Her and... what's the other gal's name from California? Katie Porter. She gave him shit too about his contractors that are supposed to be monitoring violent information or something like that. Said, "Well, why don't you monitor? Will you volunteer to monitor 1 hour a day for?" I don't know how long, and take their pay instead of your pay or some.
Yeah, monitor like murder videos and videos of beatings and things. Yeah.
Yeah, because people have to get a time out to go out in the stairwell or something and console each other or something. She was saying, I don't know how she hears all this information, but.
Oh, she's just sharp.
Hopefully she'll be there for a long time giving people shit. Who do you think will take up? Who had the oversight committee?
Yeah, I was looking at that the other day.
Jackie Spears might put her name in the hat.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be someone who's on the committee now. No, is that Grady?
Yeah. Shut up!
Nah, don't be mean to Grady.
Is he going after the buzzard, Sparky?
No, he's barking at something. Oh, there's a bunch of kids next door. He's barking at.
You know what's better than chicken feet? I bet you buzzard feet.
That's disgusting. I'd guess one of the more ranking members underneath the chairmanship would probably be Jerry Connolly of Virginia, and he's a good one. Jackie Spears on the committee, too. Peter Welch from Vermont. Alexander AOC and Ayanna Pressley and Rashida Tlaib are all there, but they're freshmen. They're not gonna get to the head of the committee that way.
Maloney has been the acting chair, I guess.
Eleanor Holmes Norton has been around for a while.
Yeah, but she's DC's quasi representative.
Yeah.
Could she be a chairman?
I don't know the answer to that. But God, what a gang of Lulus the Republican side is. I'm just looking at them. Paul Gosar, the Arizona dentist who is so despised his own family won't speak to him. Virginia Double X Fox.
Oh God.
Mark Meadows.
Glenn, I see her on a
Glenn Grothman.
I see Virginia Fox on a broom around this time of year, circling, swooping down, frightening little children. I'm sorry.
I'll get you my pretty. Yeah.
No, you're a little dog too.
And Chip Roy, famously from Dribblin' Dick, Texas, or Chlamydia Creek, or whatever it was, and of course, my representative, Carol, Crazy Cat Lady Miller. Who prays to Jesus before every vote. And it's funny how Jesus keeps telling her to vote Republican. It seems so un-Jesus-like for Jesus to tell her that. But the ranking,
why does Jesus love maggots? Yeah.
The ranking member at Oversight and Reform is Jim Shorts Jordan.
Yeah, is that the guy that doesn't wear the jacket?
Who's the ranking member on the Democrat side, Maloney?
Well, no, I mean the minority side has a ranking member. The ranking member on the majority side is the chair, and so that was.
Yeah, but who sits next? Who is sitting next to? I can't remember. I've seen the committee meetings, but I mean,
Maloney,
next to him?
Maloney, maybe.
He's the acting chair right now, so it's up to Nancy Pelosi, right?
Yeah, it's her call.
I think it'll be a woman. Just my guess.
Well, but there are factors also that weigh into it. Seniority is a big one.
Yeah.
You know, dependability and having their head on right is another thing that's important.
So poor old Steve King, he's not in the ring?
He's not on that committee. I don't know that he's on any committees.
I think he got
No, I think right? they took all of that away from him.
He doesn't have any committee assignments anymore. Because of his racist bullshit.
Wow, see, Tracy just sent a picture along. Fire in my backyard.
Oh shit. Fuck.
She shot this from the highway, but there's a huge plume of smoke off ahead of her. I don't know exactly. She said, this is happening literally in my backyard, just to let you know we're safe, but it's still scary as fuck and smoky as hell.
No doubt.
From KTLA, brush fire erupts in LA's Sepulveda Basin as wildfires burn across SoCal. I said that right, didn't I? Sepulveda?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that happened to me in 2003, around this time of year, Bob. It was after I was living in my car with the bird and the cat for a month. And then I found an opportunity to rent a room in this woman's apartment condo that I didn't know. Foolishly, it was a Craigslist listing. And I was asleep one Sunday afternoon, and I woke up, and there's like smoke in the building, in the condo. And I fired up the TV, and it's like across the highway from where I was, an area was burning. And I'm thinking, holy fuck, I'm too far north. I've got to go back down. And I was driving back then because I still had the car. I went down to the beach, and it was even down there, you know, like 8 miles east of or west of where I was when I woke up and found the smoke. And you can't get away from it. I mean, it lingered for days, as I recall. And it is scary. I would say I've got to send some positive energy or something. Of course, now if Tracy stands out in the backyard and puts her hands on her hips and gives her that head move, gives Mother Nature that head move, it might just turn around and put itself out. Because Tracy is one scary woman when she wants to be. But all kidding aside, you know, hang in there.
Yeah, you got it. I've
lived with forest fire smoke for years. I probably heard the story of when I lived in Reading. We were basically smoked in after the Motion Fire that started at Shasta Dam in 2008. And I got sicker than a dog. I was working on a job, and we could look out the back, the windows of the upper floor of the building, and the C-130s were literally coming right over the top of our building, heading for the foothills to drop fire retardant. I mean, nobody got any work done those days, but I got deadly sick after that. Well, it was not after that, but I had to go to a trip to Hayfork, where the infamous Hayfork U is. But I went up there to do work on a gate on their airport, and right in the middle of a forest fire. And I mean, the smoke was thicker than shit. And I felt like I was going to die after that day when I got back to Reading. And I quit smoking right after that. I went cold turkey and quit smoking. That was in 2008. So I've been living with this shit for years. I had a fire out back of my house last year. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, I do.
Talking about that.
Well, yeah.
We had to
along the highway.
We had to jet,
right? Sparky?
Yeah, we had the jet bombers flying right over the top of the house. Huh?
Was that near Whiskeytown, Sparky, or where was that fire?
The Sunfire last year was right out behind my house on the other side of the orchards and everything. About 2 miles away, it burned up the foothills and burned up Salt Creek Canyon. And they had all these planes dumping fire retardant. They bought one of the big jets up from Sacramento and dumped retardant. And I had one of them big old grasshopper-looking helicopters fly right over the top of my house, scared the shit out of me. One of them nozzle sucking ones with water that was coming from the Sacramento River heading towards the fire. It was amazing. But I knew it wasn't going to burn towards me because it was running away from me. And I got all this green area around me, that kind of a green belt that kind of saves me from anything like that.
Well, what is in that red stuff, that retardant stuff that they dropped? There was a thing on the news. One of our local reporters a couple of weeks ago was standing there doing a live report when the thing flew over and dumped it all over the news crews. You might have even seen the film, the tape of it. What's in that stuff? That can't
it's
be
probably
good for
proprietary,
you.
Scott. They probably can't tell you what's in it, kind of like fracking fluid.
Oh,
you know?
Geez, yeah.
It's
there
proprietary,
you, go.
You know, money before, you know, people's health, right?
It's Cheney dust.
It's Cheney dust.
Wait a minute. Chris brought his A game tonight.
It's colored so they can see where they made the last drop.
Right, exactly.
But they got to have chemicals or something in it that act, that chemically do something. But what is it?
The fire retardant. I don't know what's in it. You used to call it borate.
Borate. Probably got asbestos in it or something. Who the hell knows, you know?
But it's red so that they can see where they drop the stuff on the fire.
You got chicken feet in it? It ain't no good if it don't have chicken feet in it.
God damn it.
The helicopters just dumped water. And then when they had the big old Martin Mars down here from Canada in 2008 and was scooping water out of Shasta Lake and dumping it out of the fire. That was interesting to see.
Yeah, don't be scuba diving when there's a fire inland, because scoop your ass out of the water and drop you into an unknown area.
Oh, that would suck.
It's burning the fuck up. There used to be a story about that.
I think, yes.
Do you remember that firefighting movie with, years ago? I mean, they had
Kurt Russell and Blowback.
Is it the Ron Howard one? Backdraft?
Backdraft? Sorry,
yeah.
No, the guy that was in Close Encounters, is Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, okay.
Is Always or something like that is called. And they had a scene in the beginning of the movie of one of them scooper planes coming down and landing on the water, coming right at you.
Wouldn't like that. Wouldn't want to get scooped up. That sounds like a really dangerous ride.
Any interest among the group in the upcoming Midway movie?
Maybe.
It's really heavy CGI stuff. I don't know.
I just remember the 70s version in Sensaround with Charlton Heston. And him emoting.
Wasn't Henry Fonda in that?
Yeah, yeah. And Hal Holbrook.
Yeah.
But I remember Charlton.
That was the longest fucking movie. That thing never ended.
No, it went on forever. It was kind of like Tora, Tora, Tora. But Tora, Tora, Tora is a fine movie. I just remember the presence of Charlton Heston, playing basically the same characters he played in Planet of the Apes. Because the delivery was identical. He was looking at his young son because his young son was being a smart ass to his pop. And they were both, his son was a young Navy ensign, pilot ensign. And, of course, crusty old Charlton Heston, wise and in the ways of his years. And the dialogue was as follows. You better watch your ass, mister, or some hotshot Jap pilot's gonna flame your ass. And you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers.
Well, some hotshot Japanese pilot flamed his ass in the movie, if I remember right.
Yes, yes.
Spoiler alert.
Have you guys seen Catch 22? I think it's on Netflix.
Hulu.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Hulu.
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, I watched the first several episodes.
I watched it, and I don't have a Hulu.
Well, that's because you're a third stage guild navigator, Sparky. But it was
on movies 1, 2, 3.
Now, are you talking about the movie version with the Buck Henry movie version? Or are we talking about the series that was on Hulu?
Well, I'm talking about the series.
TV version.
Yeah.
Oh, TV.
Well,
there
Hulu.
Was a TV version?
Catch 22's on Netflix or Amazon, one or the other.
That's
what
I thought too, but I could be wrong.
The original movie is, yeah.
Well, with Clooney. With Clooney and, I mean, the acting's terrific. And it's so funny.
Well, and their attention to detail with the music and the set design and the props
costumes,
and costumes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Very, very good series.
But some of it was very painful, too. Oh, by the way, we've got a potential answer to what the fuck is in that stuff they dump on the forest fires. Randy in PA says, if it is brownish red, it is probably a bromine compound. Bromine is a known fire retardant and is nasty to humans.
There you go.
Bromine. That would be about the right color.
Remember, kids, only you can prevent forest fires. Old Smokey Bear.
And Donnie's rake.
You know, the,
I forgot
the,
to add
the,
that part.
The truth finally came out about Smokey Bear. He would capture Boy Scouts and eat them because he wanted the hats, you know? Anyway, that's
oh man,
a little known fact.
All those patches probably didn't come out the other end very well.
Well, no, I mean that'll wreak havoc on your gastro. Even if you're a bear,
yeah.
There's a bear shit in the woods. Yes, don't you see the patches all over the fucking place? Smokey's been here. Let's get out of here.
Yeah,
get that hat off.
Smokey the Bear was an actual bear cub saved from a fire. We had another one in 2008 at Whiskey Town in Northern California. They called him Smokey too.
Yeah. Can I get back to something real quick, Bob? I know the time is ticking. But that little incident in the downstairs section of the Capitol, where the duly elected members with representatives from both sides on the committee were trying to do their best to interview witnesses in a matter of some urgency concerning the nation. Okay, so you have that. Meanwhile, what was it, 30, 50 of these Tea Party type Republicans, these numbskulls, jackasses, the jackass contingent, decide to come on down the spiral staircase and try to crash the proceedings, which is against the rules. Okay, first of all, rules that were agreed upon, by the way. And not only that, but they're saying, well, it's not fair because we can't see what's going on and there's no counter witnesses or testimony or blah, 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 blah. When not too terribly long ago, a fellow by the name of Trey Gowdy,
yes,
swore up and down just how sacred, even like the finger of God himself had put upon the tablets, the stone tablets, that these proceedings must be secret. So again, it's that fucking double standard. And there, it's also, we ought to be onto the game by now. When they're out of power, they do everything to throw shit into the gear and the machinery to slow things down or fuck it up. And then when they are in power, they don't govern worth a damn.
Not to mention run up the debt like a drunken
sailor. Make up shit as they go along. Benghazi!
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, by now.
One of the people that Trey Gowdy kicked out of the meeting back then was Daryl Issa.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's like, at long last, have we learned nothing from the behavior patterns of these people? They're not here to help us, any of us.
Yeah, but I really want us to have some clarity on this, because, and I pointed this out at the beginning of the program, when Hallie Jackson comes on to interview Matt Gaetz and she says it was a stunt, and lots of people are saying that, they're missing the point. It was actually the result of a rather large conspiracy spearheaded by the President of the United States or his brain trust in the White House for purposes of witness intimidation. It's impeachable conduct. The refusal to honor the subpoenas, impeachable conduct, straight from the lips of Lindsey Graham. And witness intimidation is a crime. And that is evidence of a crime. And there was nobody there to say, hey, Matt Gaetz, Mo Brooks, Louis Asparagus Gohmert, you jackasses. You're saying there's no evidence of a crime? You're sitting here providing evidence of a crime. And the crime is witness tampering and witness intimidation.
Who's going to put the handcuffs on, though, Bob?
Well, nobody, because of the speech and debate clause.
Yeah, okay. I don't really understand that. Can you expound on that? Because I don't get that. I've heard that, but what's the deal with that?
It's best done just by looking it up, but the essence of it is that you cannot use criminal process against a member of the Congress who is going to or coming from or engaging in speech and debate as a function of their duly elected and oath-sworn job.
Okay. So ordering pizzas counts?
It shouldn't.
I heard they ordered a shitload of pizzas.
Yeah, they did, because they were aiming to mock the process. But they are terrified of what these witnesses are saying, because witnesses are showing up and telling Donald Trump to shove his little don't honor the subpoena order where the sun doesn't shine, but apparently the tanning bulbs do.
Oh, God.
That's the purpose, and by the way, referred to them as jackasses. For fans of the late, great Walt Kelly, who, you know, long before there was a Bloom County or a, or God knows a Doonesbury or anything, Walt Kelly was doing brilliant comic strip satire as the creator of Pogo. And he created a group, and he got away with it on the pages of the comic section. He wasn't on the, you know, he wasn't on the op-ed page. He was right there next to Charlie Brown and Beetle Bailey and Snuffy Smith and all those. He created the Jack Acid Society. Capital J-A-C-K, capital A-C-I-D. The Jack Acid Society. And he did that to mock the John Birch Society.
Oh, fantastic.
But I think it's time we revived the Jack Acid Society and made charter members of people like Matt Gaetz and Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Steve Cantaloupe's King and Mo Brooks' Les Brains. I swear, I wish I had, like, you know, unlimited bucks for the campaign year. I would personally go to Alabama and get my friends and give my friends yard signs that said Mo Brooks, Les Brains.
But you know, Bob, I mean, that's a great point, because I mean, the John Birch Society was nothing but a offshoot of the Klan. But all this shit that's surrounding us now, and all the those foundations from hell that the Koch brothers started, and all those other miscreants from the past, you know, Atwater, and you know, the names go on and on. We're all surrounded by this shit because of the John Birch Society. This is all birthed from that.
Well, right, and you know, some intrepid researcher found out early on that the Tea Party was nothing but the progeny of the John Birch Society. It wasn't like there was an uprising of ordinary Americans. They just rebranded, you know, Goldwater Birchers, Goldwater Republicans, Reagan Democrats. They're all the same. It's like having different names for the same species.
Yeah.
You can call them Goldwater bugs, or teabag beetles, but a cockroach is a cockroach is a cockroach is a cockroach. With a apology.
Well, what have we said? What have we said before, Bob? If it honks like a goose and it shits like a goose
and it steps like a goose,
it's a fucking Nazi.
Right, there we go.
Well, I call them puffy shirt patriots with their little three cornered hat and their flintlock or whatever firearms they were using back in that day. And that's, you know, and don't ask them to do anything useful, because that's not their purpose.
Right. Well, they're
if they were in Constitution Hall or whatever the place was in Philadelphia back in the day when the founding fathers were drawing up the principles of the country, and showed up that way, they would have been laughed out of the fucking room by the fucking founders that they so often misquote or strain points. They're famous for that shit. Taking a perfectly rational thing and twisting it in such a way as to make themselves correct in their wisdom, so-called. Puffy shirt, three-cornered hat, flintlock waving, patriots, in quotes, motherfuckers.
Well, if you want to give yourself a real mind fuck, read the Republican Party platform at the convention from 1956. Read that. And then read the 1980 Libertarian platform from 1980, the party platform thing. The Republican Party has basically morphed into that. Everything, you know, they're fucking insane. And 56, I mean, you're talking the height of the building of the middle class, of the American middle class.
Yeah, but Christopher, be careful. Republican. Even then, they were still nasty, because remember, Harry Truman desperately wanted to do what the rest of the world was doing and make health care available to every American. And every time the issue got raised, It was shot down for him by his do-nothing Republican Congress. Then along comes Eisenhower, and everybody says, well, you know, Eisenhower was the good Republican. Eisenhower railed against having health care be made available to every American and called it communism. And so did all the Republicans in those 1950s Congresses. So, I mean, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, Christopher. I just want us to remember they've always been who they've always were. It's those same 50s Republicans that gave us the obnoxiousness of the Taft-Hartley Act, which tried to undo all the gains made by working people in the National Labor Relations Act during FDR's good Democratic Congresses.
Now, the one thing that was in that Republican platform was an expansion of Social Security.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, also, those things happen. The last president prior to Andrew Yang wanting to give everybody $1,000, the last president to mention the idea of guaranteed basic income was Scott. Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Tricky Dicky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I knew that. I had the phone in my pocket. I'm getting more coffee.
Okay. Well, that's out of the Chicago School of Economics, you know? What's his name?
Milton Friedman.
Friedman,
yeah.
Hey, you got to be ready, Mr. Peabody, for the way
I know, I know, I know. Snoozing on the job, snoozing and losing.
How long are you going, Bob?
I'm leaving right now because I got to get the upload done.
Okay. If you don't see me around tomorrow, that means I don't have any.
That means you don't have any power. Yeah, brother.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I hope it doesn't happen, Sparky.
Yeah, no doubt.
No kidding. So I guess Joe from Cleveland's in town. We're going to go to a karaoke bar tonight.
What keeps bringing him to L.A.? I mean, that's him.
Well, he's in for Tracy's Halloween party on
Saturday.
Oh,
that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, that's going to be so much fun.
Pictures?
Yeah, it should be good. It should be a good time. Yeah.
Yeah, Tracy, if you're listening, please post lots of pictures from the party. Everybody wants to be there.
Absolutely. And maybe Joe will have a picture or two of karaoke tonight. I'll do my best Alabama song impression. Jim Morrison.
Rick, are you going to Tracy's Halloween party?
I think so. Oh, just myself, not Star. Yeah, she doesn't want to go.
Oh, okay.
Ah, Star, party pooper.
I know. Hey. You know?
it's going to be good fun. I know it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you guys, I'll be around tomorrow, I hope, unless, you know, something strange happens. And so we'll, and Sparky, if you're here, we'll do Friday on the Front Porch, or I'll try to ad lib one.
If you see Aces posted the link by the time the show starts, I'll be here.
Okay, good deal. Well, listen, y'all have a wonderful evening. And again, thanks to everybody who keeps the program on the air and going over, 14 years. Thank you, Jim, and many others for the happy anniversary wishes. Thank you so very much. Onward to October 24th, 2020. Shall we? Let's do. Thanks to all of you who spend over the years, who have spent your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever fashion you so do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks for these many years moderating the Front Porch to Sparky, and thanks for his help in the chat room. Thanks to Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. Hope your foot feels better, brother. You've had a heck of a couple of months too. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know. The men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for environmental justice and human rights in Appalachia. And always, 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 from the very beginning, Gina, it's all for you. We love you, son. Hopefully you'll be home soon. Later, y'all.